is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon and welcome to One Bills Drive on this Tuesday. Welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in studio from here until 3 o'clock. No more of this 2-hour short show stuff, Donald.
I like it.
3 hours or two?
No, two.
Yeah, I felt like we had a lot more to talk about yesterday. I felt like we were
We got 2
short.
Weeks. We don't have another game until
You're right.
next weekend.
You're right. Well, we got 3 hours today, and a good 3 hours, we hope. And we hope you participate as well. The lineup today, Sean McDermott, perhaps you've heard of him, head coach of the Buffalo Bills, going to be live in studio with us later on this hour, about a half hour, 35 minutes from now. We'll talk to the coach about this bye week, about the first 5 games of the regular season. Sean McDermott at 12:40 or so. Steve Tasker scheduled to join us at 1 o'clock today. We'll spend a little bit of time with Steve today to discuss where the Bills are at. He, of course, was part of the CBS-TV broadcast team for the Bills and the Bengals. We'll get Steve's take on that game and where the Bills stand after the first 5 games of the year. Coming up at 1:30, Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones. What do you got for us today? What are you going to break down today?
I have to break down some of the Tre'Davious plays from this past game. Some of the things that he did wrong against A.J. Green, and then some of the plays that he actually did well against A.J. Green. And you'll see some of the things that he did wrong, he came back and corrected, and the plays that he did right, and it worked out for him.
And we talked a little bit about that yesterday. They were high-profile plays, big plays by A.J. Green. But overall, what sort of grade would you give Tre'Davious White for his game Sunday?
I think you have to give him probably a C or something like that, just because he gave up 2 huge plays, that were big for the Cincinnati Bengals. Obviously, one was a big time touchdown, and then he did bounce back. So you have to give him a C plus for that game.
The fact that he bounced back,
that's
learned from his mistakes.
Yeah, which he did. He did that in the Denver game as well. Mm-hmm. So you can tell that he has a short memory. He's able to bounce back and make plays, and he'll use that bad play as fuel for the rest of the game and say, look, you're not going to continue to get – you want to pick on me all you want, but you're not going to continue to get these big-time plays on me. And so he does bounce back. He does have that short memory. And that's a great thing for a rookie corner in this league, because it's easy to go the other way and just go downhill fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of liked it. As I said yesterday, I like the fact that game's behind him. at least. So Donald Jones with Nuts and Bolts coming up at 1:30. He will break down some of the Tre'Davious White plays, pluses and minuses from Sunday's game. And 2 o'clock hour, starting right at 2 o'clock straight up, Trey Wingo, a regular Tuesday visitor from the NFL on ESPN, host of ESPN's NFL Live, a complete overview of the league. He's always got some interesting observations about the Bills and the NFL. So that's the lineup today. We hope you join us as well. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Our Twitter poll is up today, and we're kind of looking at the remaining 11 games for the season. We want to get your thoughts on this. Obviously, the offense is the part of the Bills game that has struggled the most through the first 5 games. So looking forward, what would help Tyrod Taylor the most for the rest of the Bills season? Look, there's a lot of work to be done on offense. McDermott said it yesterday. And a lot of room for improvement, room for growth, they say. But if you believe, as I do, that Tyrod Taylor is the best option they have at quarterback right now, what does he need most moving forward? What do you think he needs?
What does Tyrod Taylor need? I think he needs a run game. I think, first of all, he needs to use his legs more than he did this past week. And then I think he needs a run game. I think that's huge for him to have a run game, because he can work off of that run game, and that will help him out in the passing game. It will ease, the defense back a little bit. I think he doesn't really work well without having a solid run game, And so I think that's the biggest thing that he needs.
What do you think happened, at least the last couple of weeks anyway, to Tyrod Taylor being a part of the Buffalo run offense?
I'm not sure.
You can almost chart it. from the last few weeks. You know, we know Tyrod's background, 500 yards rushing in each of his first two seasons with the Bills. And, look, nobody wants him to be a running quarterback. Nobody wants him to take off, leave the pocket early, you know, earlier than he has. But over the last couple of weeks, he has not been a big part of what the Bills have done on the ground. And I guess I'm talking about the Atlanta game in particular and the Bengals game this past week. One carry for 3 yards against the Bengals, seven carries for 12 yards against Atlanta. The week before, Denver, eight carries for 13 yards, ran for a couple of key first downs in that game. But before that, 55 yards rushing for Tyrod against Carolina, 38 against the Jets. He's a weapon in the run game. And you want him to be a passer. I don't know if you want him to be a pocket passer or if you can count on him to be a pocket passer. But you also need the component that he adds to the run game, and it's been missing for a couple of weeks now.
I tend to agree with what Chris Brown said yesterday. Look, we all know what Tyrod Taylor is, okay? Now, do we want him to be better in the passing game? Yeah, but he showed us in two years and five games now that that's not really his thing. He's not going to be a pocket passer. He's not going to throw for 400 yards in a game. He have a couple of games where he might go over 300 yards, but usually that's a game where they have to throw from behind or something like that. I think he has shown us that he is a 200, 250-yard type of guy, one or two maybe touchdowns in a game. And he uses his legs in, you know, key parts of the game. And we didn't see that out of him in this last game, him using his legs to get out of trouble and things like that. I don't know if in his mind he is, you know, trying to force being a pocket passer. I don't know if the coaching staff wants him to be more of a pocket passer. We know going back to training camp that they talked about, you know, his rhythm with his feet and listening to his feet and all of that stuff. The fact of the matter is we know what Tyrod Taylor is now, okay? We've watched him now for 2 years and five games. And so he uses his legs to get out of trouble, you know, either throw the ball or get out of trouble. And so I would like to see him in the next game. I don't want to see him always just take off. You know, you need to be able to scan the field. But I'd rather see him pick up those first downs with his legs than to stand in there and get sacked six times.
Yeah. And there's definite room for improvement in his game. Our Twitter poll deals with the Buffalo Bills on offense, and we want to get your opinions on this. I just asked Donald the question. Donald says run game. I think that's the answer. But our Twitter poll, what would help Tyrod Taylor the most for the rest of the Buffalo Bills season? And we've got a lot of votes in already. 45% of you say better weapons in the passing game, receivers. And obviously they're going to have to play for multiple weeks without tight end Charles Clay now. 35% of you, this is where I would vote. I think you said you would too, right, Donald? 35% of you say return of a strong running game. What happened to the NFL's number one rushing attack the last couple of years? They're not quite there, not nearly there right now. 13% of you say changing the offensive scheme would help Tyrod Taylor. 7% have something else in mind. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. Or you can weigh in on Twitter, and I guess we are assuming, based on Sean McDermott's comments yesterday, that Tyrod's going to remain as the starter for the foreseeable future. Many of the Twitter responses want to go with Nathan Peterman, and that's fine, you know, that's fine. but that's not the question, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah. That's not the question. Let's deal with what's right in front of us here and what would help Tyrod Taylor and the Buffalo offense be more productive. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter. Couple of tweets, Gribble tweets, and he needs to throw the ball. I'm not talking dink and dunk passes. I'm talking big boy passes so his receivers have a chance to make plays. I agree with that. And you know, that's one thing when you look at the Twitter poll. You know, Tyrod, what would help Tyrod play better? He can help himself is what I'm trying to say. Maybe yeah. That's what that Twitter response is. He can definitely help himself by pulling the trigger, getting rid of it, throwing the ball. He's capable enough to throw it deep. We've seen it for a couple of years. You know, he doesn't seem to be getting receivers with a whole lot of separation. Nonetheless, he needs to pull the trigger. He needs to throw it. He needs to let it go.
That's the biggest thing. What we really need from Tyrod is more consistent play. You know, and if you think back to last year, there were games where it was like, you know, we're sitting here talking like this. And then there were other games like the Seattle game, like the Miami game, where it's like, man, he is playing good right now, you know. And then we didn't get to see him, obviously, the last game of the season after the Miami game played against the Jets. But then coming into this season, I think the biggest thing is consistency, you know, and I think he needs to throw the ball better. Yeah, he needs to throw guys open. That's for me, that's the biggest thing is throwing guys open and being able to, look, I understand that he's risk averse. I understand he doesn't want to turn the ball over. And that is a good thing. But at the same time, that can hurt you because you are reluctant to pull the trigger in certain windows that all NFL quarterbacks have to be able to make these throws. You know, I mean, it's just you have to throw that ball up the seam, whatever it is, comebacks. But the biggest thing is up the seam, those types of throws in the middle of the field, you have to pull the trigger. You can't not pull the trigger because these guys don't come wide open all the time. It just doesn't happen. You are always catching the ball with somebody covering you. Receivers have to be able to catch the ball with somebody covering them, somebody hanging draped all over their backs. And so Tyrod has to just let loose and let those guys make plays. That's the biggest thing for a quarterback. Throw the ball and let your receivers make the plays. If the receivers aren't making the plays and they're tipping the ball up and all of that stuff, I'd rather see that than to hold on to the ball.
And again, some of the Twitter responses, we are operating under the assumption, which I think is pretty obvious, that Tyrod Taylor remains a starting quarterback. I think he will. So what would help him and the Buffalo offense get better? I get all the sentiment out there. I don't know how much of it there is, but the sentiment to replace him in the lineup doesn't appear that that's going to happen. Benny tweets it, at this point, only scheme could help. You're not going to find weapons magically. No threat of pass equals nowhere to run. And James Karam tweets in about the scheme. Get him on the edge. Same game plan as Atlanta. One thing, upon looking at the Cincinnati game over again, Donald, Bengals, with their long defensive ends, those pass rushers, did a great job of containing Tyrod in the pocket. I think the Bills wanted to get him on the edge. They saw, you know, Tyrod getting outside the containment against Atlanta and saw what he was able to do downfield, how his field of vision was better. Bengals didn't let that happen.
Right.
And you could see sometimes the outside linebackers, but even their defensive ends, I'm thinking of Johnson right now with his long arms, just you're not going to get outside. We're going to contain you in the pocket.
That's the biggest thing. I was talking to one of our producers, JJ, and JJ pointed out to me how he felt like, you know, the Bengals weren't rushing to necessarily always try to sack Tyrod Taylor. They were rushing to try to just keep him in the pocket, you know. So we don't want you to get outside contained. We just don't. And some teams can do that. The Cincinnati Bengals have it. Number one, they have a good defense. And number two, they have length. You know, they have tall, lanky guys that can play you a certain way. Not every team has that personnel. And it goes back to us talking about, yeah, every team wants to, you know, you can look and see, well, this is how they stopped them. Well, do you have the personnel to do that? Cincinnati had the personnel to keep him inside the pocket, you know, and so they forced him to actually have to throw the ball. Now, when a team does have the personnel to do that, number one, you got to be able to run the ball with your running backs. Number two, he has to be able to take off and run up the middle and get out. And the biggest thing is he has to pull the trigger and throw the ball, you know, and because teams will force you into that type of situation, especially if they can see on film that you are not performing well passing the ball.
Yeah.
Every team is going to try to keep you in the pocket now. We know he can get out and run. Keep him inside the pocket. Keep him in the pocket and make him throw them out of trouble.
We all know the Buffalo offense needs help, and we're wondering from you, you can give us a phone call, what would help Tyrod Taylor the most to get this offense going? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. You can vote on our Twitter poll. Sean McDermott will be joining us in about 20 minutes, but he talked about it yesterday as well. The head coach of the Buffalo Bills at his Monday news conference was asked, how big a priority is it to get this offense going based on the way they played the last 4 weeks?
It's a big priority. It really is. It's a big priority. It's that said, you don't just ignore the other two areas either. There's three phases to the game, and we have to continue to grow and get better in all three phases. And certainly there's areas, excuse me, as late as yesterday with the offense, and like I mentioned, field position. You come out and you take advantage of those opportunities and in order to win a game, and we didn't do a good job of that yesterday. We have to improve in that area.
What is your – this has been an ongoing thing from before. Tyrod struggles when it comes to this team falling behind. He is 2-16 when the Bills fall behind by 4 points or more at any point in the game. What is that? What might that be a reflection of? And does it? How much of a concern is it that he can't seem to be capable of bringing this team back from just a 4-point deficit?
Well, you know, I don't know what necessarily happened before I got here. What I'm concerned about is where we are now and where we're going. And just like all of us, we have to continue to improve. Tyrod's working hard to continue to improve. I've got all the confidence in the world in Tyrod Taylor. And, You know, when you look at some of the things we've done in the Jets game, in the Denver game, and then also in the Atlanta game, you know, those are some things where you said, hey, that's up to the standard of performance that we're looking for. Obviously, yesterday wasn't. And that starts with me, and then it goes all the way down, that we've got to continue to grow and get better.
The second answer about Tyrod, he didn't get into too many specifics, although he did say, I've got all the confidence in the world in Tyrod Taylor, which I think kind of leads us to where we're at here, asking you, you know, what does it take? What will it take? What's the most important thing the Bills can do to get Tyrod Taylor and the Buffalo offense going? What does Taylor need the most to get the offense going? What would help him the most? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Let's take a call from Shem in New Jersey. Hello, Shem. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi, John Donald. I just wanted to make two points. And the first point, I feel like when we do run the ball, it's always in a tight formation, so it looks very predictable. And I think if we did more passing out of those tight formations, then that would make our run game less predictable. And then the second point, I think if we do run the option play with Tyrod and Shady, you know, as the Bengals did for the second half, that would help us. You know, I was wondering why we didn't do that, you know, with Tyrod being able to drop back, being able to run, or, you know, just give it to Shady. I think that would help tremendously.
Yeah, I think running – did you say option?
Yeah. Shady?
I think running, you know, some shotgun stuff where – kind of like they did last year where, you know, he hands it off to Shady going one way, Tyrod runs out the other way. I think that will help out in the running game because you have to be honest. You have to make sure you keep an eye on Tyrod running out the backside of that thing because he is dangerous like that, you know. And so, yeah, do I think they can be more creative in their running game? Yeah, I think that's one way that they can do it. I think – you know, going back to yesterday, as we talked to Chris Brown, the scheme that they're running right now, the zone, they have to figure out a way to get that right. You know, it hasn't been working thus far. They haven't really been able to spring big runs, and we're not used to seeing that. We're used to seeing LeSean McCoy, even if he doesn't have the best day, a normal day that we're used to seeing from him, he will at least spring, you know, one or two big runs, you know, a 20-yard run, a 30-yard run, or something like that. We're not seeing that at all. We're seeing guys in the backfield. As soon as he gets the handoff, he has to shake guys in the backfield, you know. And so I think the scheme right now is not working. And then you have the other side of it, which is the offensive line, you know, and those moving parts on the offensive line. It's tough to play as a team when your offensive line is in flux like that and you don't know who's going to be playing, who's not going to be playing. You're working off of different guys, you know, week in and week out. It's not easy to run, especially a zone scheme, because everybody has to work together.
We're taking a few phone calls. What would help Tyrod Taylor the most for the Buffalo offense moving forward this season? Jack calling from Akron. Hello, Jack. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Donald's right on about this zone blocking. They took the – I'm sorry, are you – oh, I'm watching the tape, boy. They took the number one rushing team and turned him into to nothing. I mean, the poor guy doesn't have a chance. It's not his fault. And also, I think that he's trying to make Tyrod a pocket passer, and he's not a pocket passer. So what would help them the most, I think, is a new offensive coordinator, but I don't think that'll happen.
I don't think so either, Jack. You would really make that move right now, five games in, you'd switch offensive coordinators?
Well, if he doesn't, he's got 2 weeks. If he can't get these guys into his system, he's got to go back to the other system that worked. I'm shocked that the players aren't telling him anything. I mean, if they're being yes men to him just to be cooperative, that's one thing. But
All right, a couple of things, Jack. You don't want, you know, players, you know, you don't want the players running the show. But if you – last week on our show, Richie Incognito, I think it was a week ago today, sat right over there and talked about the dialogue. Like, we're four weeks into it at that point. Here's what works best for us in the run game. And they incorporated parts of that. They had Richie on the, you know, on the move again. They had Dukas on the move this the other day, Sunday. So I do think they're trying to sort through what they have on offense and find the best prescription. I would certainly agree with you, Jack, that it is not working, hasn't found its rhythm yet. I also think it's very early to talk about switching coordinators. That's kind of what got you into the 17-year playoff drought, that kind of thinking.
Yeah, and switching coordinators, right, exactly. You know, you have to just – the players, Coach McDermott, Coach Dennison, everyone has to come together, talk about it, and figure out a way to make it work. Now, we can see that they are getting guys on the move now. They're mixing everything in. You know, it becomes harder, though, when you are mixing things in. Now, this is something that these guys are used to running. The problem is Ducasse last year wasn't in this offense running that power scheme and pulling and doing different things. I don't know what they did down there in Baltimore where he was last year, but now that you have these moving parts, it makes it a little bit harder. So they're trying to have the best of both worlds. The fact of the matter is, and especially with offensive linemen, you can't totally change, and we talked to Ruben about this, you can't totally change your base rules. This is something that they've gone over since the spring. You know, so you can't just change your base rules like that and say, we're going to go back to, like, scrap the whole zone scheme. We're going to go back to a total power scheme. You can't do that in the middle of a season. It just does not work like that because it takes time for these things to actually gel together, for guys to gel together in one scheme. And so I think right now they're kind of caught and trying to make both things work at one time. They just have to, I think, number one, they have to figure out who's going to be the starting five and stick with those guys and then move on from there.
We can talk with Coach McDermott about that. He's about 20 minutes away from joining us here on the show. In the meantime, we'll hear from you. What would help Tyrod Taylor the most? Is it a overhaul of the offensive scheme? Is it more weapons in the passing game? Is it a better run game? The most, all of them would help, obviously, but what would help Tyrod Taylor the most moving forward this year as the Bills offense tries to gather itself in this bye week and improve upon their 3-2 record? Lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550, and we'll hear more from you coming up in just a minute. But right now, your votes are in, fans, for the Buffalo Bills Player of the Week, powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. This week's Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, safety Micah Hyde. He got 43% of the votes cast by the fans over the last 24 hours. Jordan Poyer, his teammate back there at safety, got 23%. Steven Hauschka got 17%. Brandon Tate got 17%. But Micah Hyde is the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. You can vote the morning after each game. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. We're back with more. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Time now for Milestones presented by Units, Upstate New York Transplant Services. Bills safety Jordan Poyer in the third quarter against the Bengals. He had an interception. He also recovered a fumble, ran it back 35 yards. Jordan Poyer, the first Bills defensive back with an interception and a fumble recovery in the same game since Bakari Rambo did it 2 years ago, right, against Green Bay. Jordan Poyer. Milestones presented by Units. Save lives. Join Team Units. Donate blood. Visit units.org. Good game for Jordan Poyer. Good game for the Bills safeties in general. That's been a constant throughout the first five games of the season. We're going to have Sean McDermott in studio with us in just about 15 minutes. Ask him some of these questions. In the meantime, let's hear from you. What will it take to get what's the most important thing the Bills can do to get Tyrod Taylor and the Buffalo offense going? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Let's go to Jason in Angola. Hello, Jason. You're on the air with us.
Boy, I wish I could be asking McDermott some tough questions. I think Peterman has demonstrated he should have been the starting quarterback after preseason. If Tyrod was in his position, he wouldn't even have made the team. Other teams don't show an interest in it. We got a 3-year track record with this guy. Our offense is running out of timing pattern. And Donald, you were a wide receiver. Would you rather have a quarterback who's eager with confidence to get the ball to you or a guy who plays with no courage and timidness?
That question
trick question, Donald.
That's a trick question.
By the way, it's 2 years and five games for Tyrod, but don't let him the facts get in the way.
Yes, you know, as a receiver, you want to be given opportunities to make plays. I'll say that. As a receiver, you want to be given opportunities to make plays. You want the ball in your hands. Of course, all receivers want to catch passes. The biggest thing is you want to just be given opportunities to make plays.
Did that answer your question there?
I'm just saying, we have the AFC is wide open. Even our division looks slightly open this year. And we have a darn good team, and these guys are playing with heart and tackling and doing all the right moves, and we're being completely hamstrung. And I just don't understand how you could evaluate after the preseason and not think Peterman was the better quarterback for this offense.
Well, I don't think he's better. You do, Jason. What do you think, Donald? I don't think – to win games now, I think Tyrod's the best option. Now, today, next week. I'm sorry?
What was the QB rating in preseason of Tyrod compared to Nathan?
I don't know. Nathan's playing against second, third teamers. I don't know if he would have been
even better with first stringers. They would catch the ball. There was a lot of drops against them.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't agree with you, but you're welcome to have that opinion. What do you think, Donald?
I think right now Tyrod is the quarterback. We all have to understand that. They're not moving him at the bye week, five games of this thing, at 3-2. They're just not going to make that change. If things went, like, truly downhill, maybe then they'll make that change. But it's unfair to put Nathan Peterman right now in the game when you don't even have your receivers out there. You don't have Charles Clay out there. You don't have Jordan Matthews out there. I mean, it's unfair to put Peterman in. And
Peterman was throwing that ball in tight windows and during preseason.
I get that.
He was putting the ball where it needed to go. And Tyrod has not demonstrated that in 2.5 years.
Yeah, trust me.
2 years, five games. And he has had good moments, by the way. Just Sunday, the touchdown pass to Brandon Tate put the ball in a tight window. He needs to do more of that. He needs to do a lot more of that. There's no question about that. But I think you kind of lost sight of a big picture, Tyrod Taylor.
Confidence when the fans can look at preseason and see that Peterman was a better quarterback. And when I hear nonsense like, he put this in the best chance to win. No, he's tanking the season, putting Tyrod in. And I'd love for you to ask McDermott that.
Ask him what?
Ask him if he's tanking the season by leaving Tyrod in, because we got all the other pieces in place to have a good season and make the playoffs. You leave Tyrod in, I guarantee you, if we had Peterman in, we'd be 5-0 because these were very close games.
I disagree with that, but thanks very much for your call. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550.
It's not fair to Peterman to put him in right now. It's just not. Not with, like, the weapons that are out there on the field. It's not fair to a rookie quarterback to put him in right now. And I don't care how he looked in the preseason against second and third string guys. It's totally different against first string offensive linemen, against first string linebackers, against first string DBs, when you don't have, quote unquote, your first string wide receivers on the field aside from Zay Jones, you know, who's having trouble right now himself. So it's unfair to put Peterman in there. If you put him in there right now, Nathan Peterman can be the face of your franchise moving forward. Who knows if he is that guy? Maybe he is. Maybe somebody else is. But if you put him in right now, you can stunt his growth. And then everybody will say, well, now we need to find somebody else. No, you have to be smart. And that's the coaches think big picture at the same time that they are thinking we need to win games right now.
Fairness aside, if you want to win now, if you want to win the next game against Tampa Bay, your best chance to win is Tyrod Taylor. And you need the Tyrod Taylor from the Denver game and the Atlanta game. And, you know, as a starter, he's won, what, 18 and lost 16, right? Two games better. Yep, 34 starts. So you can win with him. He needs a lot of help around him. He has some flaws, some deep flaws in his game. There's nobody arguing that. But the best quarterback on the roster for now is Tyrod Taylor. Does it stay that way through the course of the season? I don't know. Tell me how the season's going to go. But there's no question in my mind, and preseason aside, and it's playing against second and third teamers, you know, Peterman did a lot of good things in preseason. The ball came out on time, in rhythm. But did he light it up in preseason? Was he lights out?
Off moments as well, you know, where he was inaccurate. And once again, it's against second and third stringers. You know, it's totally different when you got to get out there and face Von Miller coming at you. Then it's like, oh, this dude right here. It's totally different when you have to throw against, you know, Aqib Talib and Harris and all of those boys from Denver. Or, you know, this week coming up, next week you got Tampa Bay. And then the next, it's totally different against first string guys. And it's not fair when you don't have your star receivers on the field. I just don't think it's fair to a quarterback. And it can stunt his growth and mess him up for the rest. And he might not even ever get another opportunity. So Coach McDermott and Coach Dennison, the offensive coaches, want to make sure that he is ready before he goes in, because he could be the face of your franchise. If you put him in too early, it could totally mess him up.
There may be a time, it may come this year, when Nathan Peterman needs to play, should play. I don't believe, this is just me talking, I don't believe that this is the time. Bills are 3-2, not, you know, 1-4. They are in first place in the division for whatever that's worth, five games in. You are right, the caller, just a moment ago. Everything is right there for him, wide open for him. And if you're thinking that way, you don't switch quarterbacks to an unproven fifth-round draft pick rookie quarterback. I just don't think you do that. Greg calling from his car. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how you guys doing? I just totally agree that Tyrod Taylor is the best quarterback by far. right now to lead us to wins. And I want to talk to Donald Driver about something, but I also want to say, you know, the Bills are 3-2, tied with New England.
You know, Greg, I'm actually good friends with Donald Driver. But thank you, though.
Hey, the receivers. Now, you know, you mentioned about, you know, Peterman going against second and third strings in the preseason. I think right now Tyrod Taylor has second and third string receiving core. And as a former receiver, I mean, I think you can help us. I think it makes a big difference when, you know, the difference between a second and first string receiver running patterns, going down 14 yards and cutting at a 45-degree angle instead of running, you know, 12 yards and cutting at a 90-degree angle, all of a sudden the linebacker's right there. Tyrod Taylor has to take a sack. I think a lot of this is just we just don't have the talent right now. And I think the game plan was geared for Charles Clay to have a big game, and now he gets hurt and goes out. And now we're left with what we have. So I don't think it's fair to criticize Tyrod Taylor as much as we are. And I don't think it's fair to be as negative as we are. For good, you know, goodness sakes, we're the second seed right now in the AFC. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's – Greg, it's always going to be fair. Quarterbacks, I'm sorry, they just get most of the praise when the team is winning and they get the blame when the team is losing. That kind of comes with the job, which is why they get paid so much money and all of that stuff. But at the same time, yeah, he doesn't have his weapons out there on the field. But that, you know, he's not exempt from I don't want to say blame, but some ridicule here, because when you actually go back and watch the film, you can see certain things in his game that we've been seeing for the last 2 years in five games, you know. And so, yeah, Tyrod needs to get better. The receivers need to get better at getting open and all of that stuff. Everybody has to get better. We get Coach McDermott on the show, he's going to say that. Everybody needs to be better. We need to be better at calling plays. And it's the truth. Even though it seems like lip service, it sounds like lip service, it truly is the truth. Everybody has to get better. Tyrod, yeah, you got to pass better. The offensive line, you got to block better. And that's in the passing game and in the running game, because you got to get the running game going. Offensive coordinators, offensive coaches, we got to call the plays that put these guys in a position to make these plays, you know. And so I think everybody needs to get better. But I don't think it's fair if you put Nathan Peterman in there right now, because you don't have – look, we just played a true number one wide receiver, and you saw what he can do to a game. We don't have that right now. We don't even have our number one wide receiver, which is Jordan Matthews. Okay, you have Zay Jones right now is playing the number one, the role of the number one, and he's having his issues right now. And so I don't think it's fair to put Nathan Peterman in there. I think Tyrod right now is the guy who gives you the best opportunity because of, number one, he's been in there already. He understands the position that they're in. He does have to play better, but he also gives you that dynamic of he can get out of trouble with his legs, you know, and it's a totally different dynamic than Nathan Peterman has. And so if you have receivers that aren't getting open, well, at least I can get out of this thing and pick us up some first downs.
Just so we're clear, listeners, viewers, callers, this is not a referendum on Tyrod Taylor, up, down, in, out. This is not. We are operating on the assumption, based on what Coach McDermott said yesterday about having full confidence in Tyrod Taylor, that he is still the quarterback moving forward. We are asking you, if you'd like to participate, what would help him the most, him and the Buffalo offense? What do they need the most to be better? Not let the season is lost, because they lost by 4 points in Cincinnati the other day. All is, you know, woe is me. It's all over now because they lost a 4-point game. They've lost two games. You know, this is not a referendum on Tyrod Taylor. I just want to make that clear. Mike in Buffalo. Mike, go ahead.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I completely – yeah, are you there?
We sure are, Mike.
All right. Yeah, I completely agree with you, John and Donald. You know, Donald, you mentioned what are we going to do to help Tyrod, you know, win games? You know, and like you said, you know, we have to win as a team. You know, these guys want these instant gratification, put Peterman in. You know, I agree with you, Donald. I don't think putting him in these situations is going to make him a better quarterback. Watching Tyrod and watching his experience, extending the plays. I mean, come on. I mean, we beat Denver and Atlanta on the road. Or, you know, one game on the road, one game at home, and we lost to Cincinnati by 4 points. I think this team can only play better for Tyrod and, you know, win as a team. And that's got to be the objective here, so. Just want to hear you guys and what you think. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. I think you bring good perspective to the question This is not just about the loss in Cincinnati, the four-point loss in Cincinnati Sunday, where the offense underperformed and the offense was totally underwhelming. There's no question about that. We're five games in. We're getting a sense of who this team is. We're going to have the head coach here in a couple of minutes and get his sense of what this team is all about. But this is not just about the disappointing four-point loss in Cincinnati.
Right.
All of Tyrod's performances against Denver, against Atlanta, those count too.
Like, just think about this. As everybody's trying to put this thing on Tyrod Taylor, it's the same as last year. Everybody was putting it on Tyrod Taylor. The team last year averaged 26 points a game. The team was also the number one rushing team in the league for the last 2 years in a row with Tyrod Taylor at the helm, at the quarterback position. They're not running the ball this year. You know, they're not running the ball and they're not passing the ball. So how does not running the ball, everything fall on Tyrod Taylor's, on him? Like, no, it doesn't work that way. How come we can't get the running game going? Last year when everybody said Tyrod Taylor was playing bad, the one thing that you could lean on was at least we're able to run the ball. This year, we're not even able to run the ball. So how do you get that going? Is that Tyrod Taylor? Is he the one that has to block for these guys? Is he the one that has to see the holes up there and actually run through the holes? No, it's not all on Tyrod Taylor. It's a team game. That's why football is the ultimate team sport. It's a team game. Yeah, the quarterback gets blamed for a lot. But at the same time, everybody else has to play better around him.
Let's take a call from Connor in Buffalo. Welcome, Connor.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Real quick, I don't know why. I think Bills fans have such an expectation and they're yearning for a successful season that anything that goes wrong, you know, they look to point fingers, and rightfully so. I mean, blame it on the job, blame it on whatever you want. But at the beginning of the season, the expectation was probably not going to make it to the playoffs. And, you know, I don't know. We're 3-2. You can't really just, oh, it's all Tyrod. You know, there's a lot of things and a lot of circumstances around him that have, you know, caused him to play the way he's playing.
Sure.
And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with our struggles on offense. Yeah, McCoy needs to get rolling, and there's a lot of things that need to change. Maybe put Tyrod in the shotgun a little bit more and kind of give him that space that he needs. So if he does need to ditch out, he can. And, Donald, whenever you're ready to lace him up again, man, you let the Pagulas know. And, you know, hopefully things change around for the Bills.
Yeah, I wish, Connor. I
would you have
wish.
To take a pay cut if you signed a contract to play?
Take a pay cut from what I make now?
Just asking.
No, I bet it'd be a big boost in the pay going out there on the field.
Has the thought crossed your mind?
No. It has not.
Not?
And listen, I wish I could go out there and lace him up. When people say it all the time, I'm like, listen, trust me. I feel the same way as you. I truly wish that I could lace him up. I truly wish that, you know, people ask me about Stevie. How come they won't bring Stevie back? I truly wish he would come back to Buffalo. I do. It would be fun.
What do you want, an old-timers game?
Hey, I don't care what it is. But I just can't. Body won't allow it.
Okay. We got the coach coming up in a couple of minutes, so come on back for that. Sean McDermott going to spend a few minutes here, and we'll ask him some of these questions, and we'll continue the dialogue. Steve Tasker coming by at 1 o'clock, Trey Wingo at 2 o'clock, Donald Jones, nuts and bolts, the closest he gets to being on the field.
That's right. That's the closest.
That's coming up at about 1:30. Got a lot more to come. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Maybe the bye week, but there's players here. Kind of a busy day at One Bills Drive. We're going to get head coach Sean McDermott in studio with us in a couple of minutes. He's tied up meeting with players as we speak, but he'll come on eventually, and we'll talk with him about where the Bills stand at the bye. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Buffalo offense. They need to make improvements, no question about that. What would help Tyrod Taylor the most for the rest of the Bills season? He does need help. He is the quarterback. Sean McDermott said it yesterday. He has utmost confidence in him. But what could the Bills do to get Tyrod Taylor the most help the rest of the season? On Twitter, 45% of you say the Bills need better weapons in the pass game. 34% say they need to get back to the strong run game. 12% say they need to change the offensive scheme. 9% say something else. Let's hear from you. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John calling from Tonawanda with a thought on this. John, go ahead.
Yeah, so I know you guys are upset with people calling in, not giving suggestions how to make Tyrod better, but I think a lot of us believe there is no way to make Tyrod better. He's been in the league for, 8 years now, and we've seen the same thing here for 2 years.
Well, let me just stop before you go much further, John. It's not a question of how to make Tyrod better, but how to make the offense better. What can they do around Tyrod Taylor, I guess, to improve? And look, we all acknowledge Tyrod's faults. We all acknowledge his weaknesses. Some people feel more strongly about it than others. I happen to believe, I won't speak for Donald, that you can probably win a little bit with this guy if you help him out a little bit. That is the central question, not how to make him better per se. But go ahead.
Well, so a couple of points on that one. I agree with you. How do you make the offense better? Why can't you with Tyrod? The reason is the defenses don't respect his passing ability. So they're playing 9-10 guys in the box. I mean, I sit at the games, season ticket holder. You watch the games, third and long, and they've got 9 guys in the box and 2 guys 4 yards deep. They don't respect his passing ability. So how can you run the ball? It's almost impossible. We saw that the last couple of weeks. Shady can't get anywhere. And then the other point, the other gentleman called in earlier about putting Peterman in. I go, you guys are against it, but what experience did Tyrod have as a starter when we brought him in and signed him on as our starter? Sometime or another, we got to put somebody in. It's like someone coming out of college for any job.
Tyrod had a couple of years in the league as a backup. He knew the league a little bit when he came here, right? 4 years in.
Yeah, but to the point you guys were making, your comment about Peterman is all he played against was second and third stringers. Well, what did Tyrod play against? He wasn't a starter. What did he play against?
No, we were talking about that point. I hear you. We're talking about that when people look at his numbers or his performance in preseason. But you're right. Somebody's going to give him a chance. I would not be surprised if that chance comes here for Nathan Peterman next year, later this year, but not now. I don't think now is the right time to do it.
I just think it's too early in the season. You're still sitting at 3-2. You're still tied for the first in your division. I don't think making a quarterback change is the answer. That's not going to help your running game. That's not going to help your entire offense. Yeah, you might get a different quarterback in terms of passing the ball, getting it out on time. That's not going to help. That's not the answer.
There's a really good – I know we get hung up and quarterback talk will always do this. There's a really good piece on SI.com written by Andy Benoit last week before the Cincinnati game. And we talked about a little bit, basically, can the Bills sustain the success? But really what he dives into is how they, with success in Atlanta and Denver, they were successful in working around Tyrod's weaknesses, his limitations. It's important to read, I think, if you follow this team and care about the team, because it points out what Tyrod can do on a positive sense from their offense, but how good coaching will allow you to work around it, which, by the way, is the essence of good coaching.
Yeah.
It's not just Tyrod who has weaknesses out there, right? They're covering up and adjusting for everybody's strengths and weaknesses.
You have to cover up. You have to adjust. Look at, what the Bears do last night. The Bears made their switch at quarterback, and what'd he do? He made the rookie mistake at the end of the game, and throws the interception, and they end up losing the game, And so I just don't think – he played well the most part of the game, but then he made the rookie mistake. He actually – is out there with, I guess, the guys that they've had at receiver for all year, with the exception of Kevin White. But I think you put Peterman in right now, he doesn't have his wide receivers out there. He doesn't have a guy that he can go to and make the big play for him. What do you have? He doesn't have his tight end on the field. What does he have to work with? I just don't think it's fair to put him in right now. I think it truly will stunt his growth.
Here is Kurt in Lake Villa, Illinois. Where is that, Kurt?
Hello, am I on?
You are on, Kurt. Where's Lake Villa?
Well, north of Chicago.
Okay, almost.
40 miles north of Chicago, right at the Wisconsin border.
Okay, good. Good to have you with us. What's up, Kurt?
Well, I was at the game in Cincinnati on Sunday, and what always amazes me, number one, we don't need to do anything. Tyrod is more than okay. I don't think you take out a starting quarterback that has the mobility that he has. What my question, I'll let you guys kind of talk about it. So often in the NFL, too many people are trying to run play actions on first downs. I understand the game of football very well. But, straight ahead running with Mike Tolbert, the guy's getting you 4 yards a crack. I thought Shady was too bouncy on Sunday. But, my question, I guess my statement would be, leave Tyrod alone and let's just focus on getting downhill and being happy with 4 yards, as opposed to this constant want to play the deep ball and do all these things that, fantasy owners are interested in. But guys understand the game of football. It doesn't matter if you win 3-0 or 50 to nothing. It's about ball control, moving the football, and being okay with 3 to 4 yards.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. That is an extremely old-school position, but yeah. it's It's good to hear you articulate that, Kurt. And I do think they were successful on first down play action for a couple of weeks, very, very successful. And I could understand why they would try to do that against the Bengals the other day. But to me, and this is why it goes to our Twitter poll, to me, the number one key to getting Tyrod and the offense back on track is to get the running game going. And, yes, I know teams are loading up the box. You know what? They loaded up the box the last 2 years when the Bills led the league in rushing. So that, to me, would be the biggest thing to getting Tyrod Taylor the most help and to get the offense going.
Yeah, I just think, as everybody keeps taught, the biggest thing for getting the offense going, number one, is to get the running game going. You have to get the running game going, and that starts up front with your offensive line. All right, figure out who the line is going to be, stick with those guys, and get those guys going. It will get your running game going. I think this team, as bad as the passing game has been here in Buffalo for a couple of years now, you have always had, or for the last couple of years, you could say, well, at least they can run the ball. You know, this year you don't have that. So I think you need to get the running game going, and then you can work on your passing game from there. But they have to make sure that they can get the running game going. And that is an issue. You have one of the best running backs in the league who's averaging – I mean, he's not playing well right now. He can't really get loose. And we've become so accustomed to seeing LeSean McCoy get loose. It's not happening right now, so they need to get the running game going. In terms of this whole Nathan Peterman talk, I just don't think it makes sense right now. I don't. It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to put him in right now without the weapons to actually make plays for him. You keep Tyrod Taylor in there. I think the mentality of, oh, this is not working, move on. This is not working, move on from that guy. That mentality is not a good mentality to have. That's what keeps you losing games, all right? You want to move on from a coach. You want to move on from the quarterback. You want to move on from this guy. That is what keeps you losing games. You have to understand that these are players in the league that are getting used to playing in the league. They are growing each week. You want them to grow each week. And as an offense, we got calls yesterday, move on from Rick Dennison. Why? We're 3-2, we're 5 games into the season. Why do you want to move on? He's already shown that he has the flexibility of, you know, having some wrinkles in the offense along with his main zone principles. Why move on from him? You know, that mentality is not a good mentality. It's really a losing mentality. You have to stick with guys and give them an opportunity to actually come along and start to win.
All right, a break here. Sean McDermott standing by. We're going to get him on the set in the next couple of minutes or so. Steve Tasker going to join us in the next hour or so. And Donald Jones with his nuts and bolts, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward
to it. I'm excited about that. We'll take a break. We're back. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive. The bye week is here, and the Bills are still working. Meetings, workouts on tap at One Bills Drive. Walkthrough, light practice later this afternoon. Head coach Sean McDermott will put them through a practice tomorrow, and then they break for the bye. 4 days off. The Bills returning to work on Monday. They can use the bye to heal up. They've lost tight end Charles Clay, Buffalo's second most productive pass catcher, for multiple weeks, according to the coach. He injured his knee in the loss at Cincinnati on Sunday. Bills also monitoring the progress made by nickel corner Leonard Johnson, who left Sunday's game with a hamstring injury. A trade in the NFL today. The Arizona Cardinals looking for help in their offensive backfield. They sent a conditional draft pick to the New Orleans Saints for running back Adrian Peterson. Cardinals' running game has been a major weakness since they lost David Johnson to a fractured wrist in week one. They are last in the NFL in total rushing yards. Adrian Peterson, at age 32, had 27 carries for 81 yards in 4 games in his first season with the Saints. Giants wide receiver Brandon Marshall will undergo season-ending surgery today on his injured ankle. He sent that out on his Instagram account. He's the third Giants wide receiver with a foot or leg injury to be lost for the season. This one happened in their loss to the Chargers this past Sunday. The Detroit Lions are going to sign former Green Bay first-round draft pick Dayton Jones to help bolster their defensive line, the 26th overall pick in the 2013 NFL draft. Hockey news. The Sabres lost to the Devils last night 6-2, or yesterday rather. Evander Kane with 2 goals, but the Sabres winless to start this season, 0-2-1. And Evander Kane leads the team with 4 goals and has 6 points. The Sabres off today, return to the ice for practice tomorrow. Then they fly out to the West Coast for a 4-game road trip that starts in San Jose on Thursday, then go to Los Angeles and Anaheim before their first ever game to Las Vegas. And baseball, National League Division Series Game 4 coming up this afternoon at 5:30. The Washington Nationals at Wrigley Field against the Cubs. Cubs lead the series 2-1. They can win it today. The Astros advanced to the American League Championship Series yesterday with a 5-4 win over the Red Sox. And the Dodgers finished off the Diamondbacks in a sweep yesterday. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined in studio by our buddy Steve Tasker from the NFL on CBS and former Bills special teamer. He's on the Buffalo Bills Wall of Fame here at New Era Field. And we're going to have Sean McDermott here for a second. That's what this empty chair is all about. Your impression, Steve, of the Bills game. You did the broadcast with Tom McCarthy and Steve Berline. What did you think?
Yeah, well, they're a tough team to beat. I said that during the broadcast. I think one of the things that's going to be, I think, indicative of this team, they don't give anything away. They're a tough team to beat. But if they run into a team with a really good defense, talented defense, like Cincinnati,
Right. Those
are the teams they're going to struggle with. But if the Bills have anybody on their team that has a bad defense or statistically poor defense or a defense that has a bad day, they're going to win. They're just too good offensively and defensively not to. And because of that, that's what you can count on, I think. And that's why I like the way they're headed, because, you look at the five games they've played. They had played three top teams, to me. The most talented team, head coach, the most talented team I've seen of the four that they played was really Cincinnati. But they beat Denver and they beat Atlanta, two teams that are very deep and very playoff-oriented, and they couldn't get it done. They couldn't make as few mistakes as the Bills did to win those games, and the Bills came out on top of those games. And that's why I think the Bills are on the right track. And I think unless they play a team that's got a top-flight defense like they did yesterday or Sunday, they're going to win those games.
Talk about top-flight defenses. We are joined now by the head coach of the Buffalo Bills on the set with us, Sean McDermott. I was crunching some numbers, Coach. You probably already know this. Over the last couple of weeks, your team has been up against some of the best defenses in the league. When you look at Carolina, Denver, Cincinnati the other day, I think they're all of them in the top five defensively in the NFL. You won't see many defenses like that the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the case, and we've gone up against good competition. I think we've grown in some areas. We've got a lot of work to do, and when you go up against great competition, your flaws get exposed and your weaknesses get highlighted. And so we have to learn from those opportunities and in order to grow and evolve, which we need to do moving forward.
Questions, you guys, for the coach?
No, I
got a bunch.
What was your message to the team after that? I mean, yeah. They're tough. It's always tough to win. I mean, no question about it. I mean, even the Bengals will tell you that after beating Cleveland the week before, 31-6. Mm-hmm. But what was your message to this team after this? I mean, this is you're still 3-2, and close losses are hard to take.
I'm not sure what's easier. Is it close?
Yeah.
Is it rather lose?
It's easier to chalk it up when it's a bad day.
41-0. I'd prefer the close loss, I guess, even though that's hard and gut-wrenching. I got home Sunday night after the game, and I said to my wife, I said, after all these years, I said, I still don't like losing. Yeah. And it's hard to take, and I feel for the players. I feel for the entire building. And regardless of what position, coordinator, position coach, now head coach, it doesn't get any easier. In fact, it probably gets harder. And speaking with Dick Vermeil over the years, I know Coach Vermeil had a hard time letting go of the losses. And I'm trying to learn from that and those conversations with Coach Vermeil. So that's been hard. But with the team, if we preach respect the process, if we preach that we're building and trying to grow and play our best football, our brand of football in November and December, which I feel is important philosophically, then we have to use this as a learning opportunity. And honestly, some of the biggest takeaways were the details. Like, we can't let the details become the little things become the big things. And whether it's alignment, assignment, we gave up a couple big plays on defense. Why did it happen? Well, because we're not detailed. And mm-hmm. So we have to learn from this. And we've got some young players that went through some growing pains the other day that have to learn from it. And unfortunately, you don't want to do it this way, but you got to learn the hard way, and we've got to grow from it.
Coach, how important is it for you in your mind? And we all know how hard it is because we don't get to now see the team play again until next week. But going into the bye week, to win that game going into the bye week and come out with some momentum.
Well, I think my family would have appreciated a little bit more if we won.
Are you going to be unpleasant at home?
I'm not going to be as good as I probably would have been, even though I try to be. But that said, the bye week is good to push back, gain perspective, build self-awareness, and then get a little bit of rest at the same time. And we've got a long haul after this. And the good part is we play three of the next four games at home in front of our fans, and so we're looking forward to that. We have to use this bye week to educate us on what we need to improve on, and also use it the right way to come back with a little bit more of a sense of urgency and an attitude of hey, we learn from it, but we also use it to drive us to play better the next week.
There are certain people who would say, I'd rather have a bye week week 8, like right in the middle of the season. Others say, I'd rather have it earlier where it gives us an extra week to make some changes if we need to make changes. Do you have a preference? You can't control it, but do you have a preference in where you like to have
I think everything happens for a reason. I believe that. And when you look at it, most people say week 8 is the halfway point, but really we've been going since training camp. And mm-hmm. So you had training camp, 2 weeks of practice, four preseason games, really 4 or 5 weeks into the regular season is really the halfway point.
Yeah.
And the good part for us, if you break it down, is we come out, we play three games, and then we get a mini bye with the short week playing the Jets and not looking too far ahead. But that gives us a little bit of another break as we head into the final, back third, back half of the season.
Coach, I looked at a calendar today to prove your point. It was 11 weeks ago when you started training camp, and we are 11 weeks away now from the end of the regular season. So this is, in a way, the exact midpoint of really the heavy workload that you have. Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah, and the guys have worked hard. I mean, it's we've done a lot in a short amount of time, and credit the entire team. Credit the entire building for what we've been able to accomplish in a short amount of time. We're not I don't think anybody in that locker room would say that we are where we need to be. That said, there's been a lot of small victories, small wins along the way, and that's been a total team effort.
You talk about now as you get a chance with the bye week, Charles Clay is going to be gone for a few weeks, and you kind of have an identity, a sense of who your identity is, how your team's going to win games. Now how do you take what's left of your roster with, you got guys up, you got guys down, Jordan Matthews has been down, now he's out for a while. So how do you now figure out who you are and how you're going to be who you are and win games moving forward? Because now you've got some key guys that are out of the lineup.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where you earn your money, I guess.
It is. The good part about it is we always embrace the philosophy of the next man up. So from a resiliency standpoint, from a grit standpoint, this team has learned before now even, hey, we've got to be, you've got to have that quality, that characteristic about yourself, about your team, to win in this league, because it's every week you got to bring your A game. And then the other part of it is we played, if not started, 5 rookies the other day in the game. Well, how often does that happen in a game?
Yeah.
And to say that we were in a position against a team that's been in the playoffs multiple years, I think they missed last year, if I'm not
mm-hmm.
mistaken,
mm-hmm.
But they've had success in where we're trying to go, and we're in that game with a chance to win. And if we'd done some things better, potentially, what should have, could have. I don't want to get into that. But I like the progress we've made. I like the contributions we've gotten from some of these young players and finding out who they are, and then ultimately, Steve, as you said, who we are.
Coach, you have so many guys down. I mean, let's talk about Jordan Matthews and now Charles Clay. And so everybody's like, man, they need to trade for a wide receiver. They need to bring somebody in off the streets. For me, it's hard in football to bring guys, random guys off the streets, or trade for somebody to come in, because they can't come in here and learn your system fast enough to actually make key contributions in a game the next week.
Well, Brandon and his staff always look at everything. And then Brandon and I catch up every week or every day for a certain part of the day. And I know they're looking hard on how we can improve our roster, whether it's trades or whether it's guys that are out there available on the street to help our roster. And so, having a workout this morning, just the tryout that we had this morning of different positions, pretty extensive tryout of different positions, that's important. We're always trying to refine our roster. So that's an ongoing process and a work in progress of who we are as a team. And we're building. And that I think, is the biggest thing and the most exciting thing at the same time, is we're building a team. And, yes, we've made some huge strides, but we've got some work to do, and I love the excitement around the team. I love the fan support, and I love how this community has gotten behind us when we were 3-1. Now we're 3-2, doesn't stop our momentum. We continue moving forward.
Talk a little bit about, you know, specifically about, you know, you got E.J. Gaines, Jordan Matthews, Cordy Glenn's been in and out of the up and down, maybe not in there. Of course, Charles Clay, and now you've got, you know, I mean, there's a list of guys, and that's really what happens in the season. I mean, you find out if you can win games with your depth, and this is a team that you came in and you know, this is a roster that you really had to flip over a lot of new guys, and some maybe you don't know about, but who are you most excited about maybe getting an opportunity, some of the guys that are depth, or maybe somebody you've already watched the game from Sunday, who gave you a pleasant surprise about getting some opportunity and stepping up?
Well, I'm excited to see, as I mentioned earlier, some of these young players that had their first opportunity. Matt Milano, for example, had his first opportunity. It wasn't too big for him. Let's see how he is the next week and the jump that's made from one week to the next. You mentioned E.J. Gaines and what he's done for us. When we get him back healthy, what he'll be able to do moving forward. I mean, yeah, you know, we've had a number of players out, but it also gives us an opportunity, like we talked about, for somebody else to step up, show us what they're all about. And you know, like I said, we're building this team as we continue to grow every week. And that's the exciting part. These guys are excited about it. They're also excited to get away, I think, a little bit and reset, spend some time with family and friends and just be normal guys.
Head Coach Sean McDermott in studio with us. Just a couple more minutes. Coach, what can you do to get the offense going, in particular the run game? What's your evaluation of where you're at after five games here?
Well, we're not where we need to be, and I think that's the plain truth, is we're not where we need to be, I would say, as an overall offense as well. You mentioned the running game. I would say the same thing about our team, though. Mm-hmm. We're not where we need to be. The run game alone has been a strength of this group for the last year or two, and the most important thing to me is not that we are ranked number one in the running game, but that we are an effective offense that can move the ball. That's all I care about, is mm-hmm. whatever it takes, whether it's the run or the pass, you have to be able to move the ball down the field in some way, shape, or form. And when you're given short fields, you've got to be able to cash in. And it's not field goals. It's not punt the ball back. It's we take advantage of those short field opportunities. So you know, at the end of the day, you've got to be able to take what the defense gives you. And certainly we have an identity of being able to run the football. We've had that, or this team has had that in previous years, but at what expense, right? So you have to be able to throw the football and offset the run and the pass with one another. So I'm not as focused on – I am focused on the running, on the rushing attack, John, but I'm also focused on developing the passing attack as well.
And along those lines, Tyrod Taylor, his performance for the first five games, you mentioned yesterday your high level of confidence in him. Can you talk about that and maybe tell what you've seen from Tyrod through the first third of the season so far?
Well, when you look at three of the five games, you know, I feel very strong about his performance and what he's done on the field and how he has moved the ball against some good defenses. I feel confident about Tyrod and what he brings to the table. And when you mix the play-action game with the running game that needs to continue to improve, that becomes tough to defend. We need to develop in other areas as well. Not just those two areas, but what are we doing on third down, 2 minute in the drop back game? And so all of that factors into how you become an offense that is growing and evolving. And as I mentioned to the team the other day, it's not about, hey, this is a defensive team. No, not just because I'm a defensive coach or a head coach, but we're a balanced team that can win in any of the three phases. And that's when you become a dangerous football team, when you can do that.
You have experimented a little bit with offensive line changes over the last couple of weeks. Is it important to you? Is it a priority to settle in on a five and move forward? And is there a timetable for that?
I don't think we need to limit ourselves in that way. I mean, I believe wholeheartedly in open competition. It only should make, if you're a true competitor, it should make you better. And those are the types of guys we want, the guys that are willing to every week feel like they have to earn their spot. And, you know, I've been fortunate to be around some really good players over the course of my coaching career. And Brian Dawkins, who was a safety in Philadelphia, said that same thing to me. He said, Sean, I've got to earn my job every training camp. Well, if he can say it, and a guy like Luke Kuechly feels the same way, you know, why not all of us, mm-hmm. right, myself included? Mm-hmm. I've got to do my job every week so that I earn my job. And so guys that are wired that way are the guys that over the course of time you win with. And And so, you know, that's a big part of our philosophy and what we're looking for moving forward.
So what do the guys look forward to? How much time do they get off? I mean, are you going to give them a chance to, like, get out of town, or is it going to be, chop it up a little bit, make sure they kind of hang around, but give them a little time off their feet? What's your philosophy on the bye week?
Right, you know, we've got some work to do, and like I said, some film work to get in and to learn from. So because the bye is a little bit earlier for us and it's our first season, we've decided to keep guys around for a part of the week and then give them some chance to get out and spend some time with family and friends and get some rest. Also for the coaching staff to get some rest. They've been working hard as well.
I was just about to ask you, what about you? Yeah, when you get away, what do you do?
Family time. Yeah, family time. I look forward to it. Look forward to going to soccer games and baseball games, softball games, football games, and just being an everyday guy out there and being a dad, being a husband. I look forward to that.
As always, how do you be an everyday guy? I'm sure when you get to the field, everybody's like staring at you because they know who you are. Do they ever come up to you and, Coach, can we talk a little bit? Like, let's talk about this. We need to talk about this.
Yeah, no, the fans here have been just tremendous. I mean, I was watching my son my son's football game the other day, and I was trying to keep myself back because it's about the kids on the field. It's not about me and you know, fans have been great. They come over and introduce themselves, and just the passion of the fan base in this part of the country is unbelievable. It's part of the reason why, as I've said before, this job was so appealing, and that hasn't changed in my mind. And I look forward, like I said, to getting back home and playing against Tampa Bay in our stadium, and I know the players feel the same way. We've adopted the mantra of defend our dirt, and the players tap a sign every time they go onto the field in the hallway that says defend our dirt because they know what it means. There's a lot of sweat equity that's been put into this football field and this team, whether it's the players or the fans.
Coach, thanks for this. Please get some time off. Take it easy a little bit.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and maybe we'll do it sometime again soon. Huh?
Let's do it. We're here all the time, every day, noon to 3. Coach Sean McDermott joining us in studio. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Steve Tasker remains on with us, even though, did you see that it's pretty nice out there? You could probably get some golf in there.
Man, I got things I got to do now. Man, season's hard and hot and heavy. I got to mow my lawn or something. I got to rake some leaves and then mow my lawn.
You seem to be looking for reasons not to play golf.
I played last week.
Okay.
It does sound like that, though. You're trying to find ways not to play golf.
Well, I don't want everybody to think I just play all the time. Not at this time of year.
There is a time
in the
year
summertime,
when you do.
I do play all the time, constantly.
We're happy to have you here. Steve Tasker with his regular Tuesday visit. We just had Sean McDermott in. Just generally, what do you guys think of what the coach had to say? Steve,
I've always been impressed with him. I like the direction he takes this club. The proof is on the field. They played three of the most talented teams defensively. You said it. The last three teams, they were all top five defensive numbers. Cincinnati is an outstanding defense.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the number. If they can score 20 points, I don't think anybody's going to score 20 points on this defense, on the Bills' defense. And I think that's the number the Bills have to shoot for offensively.
I think, you know, we all just have to understand that it is a work in progress. This is the point where you start to have injuries and different things that they have to deal with. There will be some defenses that they were – now, I don't know if they will face defenses like they face in these few weeks of the season.
To that point, can I just – because I do have the numbers in front of me now. So, so they just lost to Cincinnati, number 2 defense in the NFL.
Right.
The prior week, they beat Atlanta, number 10 defense in the NFL. Before that, Denver, the number 1 defense in the NFL. Before that, Carolina, the number 3 defense. The Jets are 25th, so – Four games against top 10 defenses in the NFL, and they won two and two.
They're not.
The point is, they need to get better on offense. We acknowledge that, but they're not going to see those tough defenses down the road.
The callers have been talking, and everybody's been saying, "Hey, they need to. You know, they haven't been running the ball well. They haven't been doing this. How can they get the run game going? I'll tell you how they can get the run game going. They got to figure out a way to throw it better. I mean, that's all there is to it. And you say, well, Tyrod doesn't listen. They got to figure out a way to throw the football. That's what they're not doing well.
Right.
We all know you can't run it consistently well enough against a 9-man box Even against an eight-man box, they're going to get you once in a while, particularly if they don't believe you have a chance to throw it. Mm-hmm. Even play action wasn't really getting it done for them this last week. They've got to figure out a way to throw the football consistently and effectively. If they can do that, everything else is going to get better.
Can I just make one more point about opponents? And, and so four of the last five opponents have been top ten defense. The next four opponents, are you ready for this? Tampa Bay, 30th in the NFL in defense, right? Followed by Oakland, 23rd in the NFL in defense. Followed by the Jets, 25th in defense. Followed by the Saints, 29th in defense. Those are the next four. So you went from four of the top ten to four of the bottom eight, seven in the league.
Well, hopefully.
That's what you're going to.
Hopefully this team looks a little bit different against those defenses because then everybody will be like, well, Murph,
and here's the issue, though. Now you don't have Charles Clay and you, you don't have Jordan Matthews. Your defense may struggle because, you know, unless Humber comes back, E.J. Gaines is in and out of the lineup. You know, you can go down the list. Cordy Glenn's still not, you know, your left tackle and offensive line still not what it was a year ago because Cordy's not healthy. I mean, that's – and I said it on the broadcast on Sunday. That's one of the things, the reasons we went back and did the numbers. There were six years in the last 17 where the Bills started out 4-0 or 3-2 or like that, right? 3-2 or better, 4-1, 5-0, whatever it was. And there were six out of those years. And of those, 76% of the time, teams go to the playoffs when that happens.
Yeah.
Well, the Bills never did because they start losing depth. And they never had the depth behind the front line to compensate for that. When you lose, you know, and I'll tell you, that if something happens to LeSean McCoy, you know, there's your season right there.
Why'd you bring that up?
Well, you think about it. But see, that's the test that comes along. Now they played through these big, you know, these top five defenses. Now they got to go against these others, but they're not going to have all their guys. They're not going to have Jordan Matthews. Yeah. They're not going to have, you know,
Charles Clay,
Ramon Humber. I mean, I thought, that guy was a warrior. I mean, I thought he was playing really well. And I got to say this: I've had a busted thumb. A linebacker or a special teams guy can play with a busted thumb after a week, particularly after the bye week.
Receiver can't.
Receiver cannot.
Yeah.
No, receiver cannot. Jordan Matthews can't, but Ramon Humber can, and he can be effective.
Steve Tasker in studio with us. Your thoughts on what has to happen for the Buffalo offense to get better? What do they need to put around Tyrod Taylor to get things better offensively? Lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Jamie from Buffalo on the air with us. Jamie, welcome to the show with Donald and Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead, Jamie.
No, I just want to agree with all of you. You don't pull the trigger on Tyrod Taylor. I think he's an exceptional quarterback with a very poor receiver core. He needs more time in the pocket, or he has to run out of the pocket to get these guys open. And it's really based on the receiving core, but on the side I disagree with is the running game. I think we got to start the running game to open up the receiving end. Sean McCoy had 63 yards last game. He hasn't been a factor in the last three out of the four games. When he was a factor, it was against the Panthers. He had one good game out of the last five, and he's just not breaking it free. He's not being a threat to the defense. And if you got a running game that's a threat to the defense, you can throw the ball. But until our running game gets going, until McCoy gets his head out of his butt, I mean, we're not going to get anywhere.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Jamie, you can say that all you want. You got to get the running game going, but teams don't believe the Bills can throw it, and they're not going. You're going to have to prove that you can in order to win games, and you got to be effective doing it. If you're not going to throw the football, teams will throw 11 guys in the box, and Darian, you can't do it. I don't care if you can pick an all-star lineup throughout the history of the National Football League and put those guys over on offense, they still won't be able to run the football against the 30th-ranked defense this year in Tampa Bay. They won't be able to do it then either. They won't be able to do it against New Orleans with a poor defense. They won't be able to do it because those teams are good enough, even if they're poor ranking, to stop the run if they know you're going to run it.
But the Bills ran the ball against loaded boxes for a couple of years here, Steve. You know, I mean, that hasn't changed. They've been unbalanced.
Well, I'll tell you, the first year Tyrod Taylor was in town, he led the league in long ball.
Right.
He led the league in completed long ball. They haven't done that since, you know. And one of the reasons, obviously, was the presence of Sammy when he was playing and playing well. That was probably the highlight of his time here in Buffalo, actually. But mm-hmm. until you get the ability to keep a defense on its heels, and they did have, I'll tell you, the Bills did have a nice series. I was watching it, I think it was the third or next to the last series before halftime. They ran the ball really well against Cincinnati. They started making some hay. Mm-hmm. And they looked good. And that was the one that was the one before the turnover that led to the Tate touchdown in the back of the end zone.
Right.
They ran the ball well. But I'm telling you right now, you can say, hey, it's not LeSean McCoy's fault that they can't run the football. So you don't have to call in and say, hey, LeSean's not doing it. He's not breaking free. He's not. Listen, the guy split on a screen pass with two guys on him. He made 5 yards out of a two-yard loss last week. I mean, it's not LeSean McCoy who is the problem with the running game. I'm telling you right now. It's the fact they got nine guys in the box.
What about the scheme that they're running, the zone scheme?
You can make a point for that. It's new. Mm-hmm. And it's different. Now, they were really good at running that power and pulling, you know, Richie Incognito coming around the mm-hmm. edge or John Miller coming around the other way and pulling and kicking guys out and running, having LeSean pick his spots. They were very effective doing that. They've done it once in a while on certain plays, but it's not – that inside zone thing is what they're trying to work now, where the offensive linemen come off, start to run laterally and force the defense to either try and cut behind a block to get into the backfield or beat them across their face to get into the backfield. And then the offensive linemen make their play and their blocking assignments off of that defender. And then the running back picks the hole where they vacate. And that's – it's different. It's different, and it hasn't been as effective as of yet. It doesn't mean it won't be, but they're certainly not running it as well as they did, you know, the last 2 years.
With Steve Tasker from the NFL on CBS, fresh off his call of the game, Bills and Bengals on Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium. You mentioned that one series, Steve. You know what series bothered me for the Bills on offense? And it's happened a couple of times where they get the ball to start the second half, get the second half kickoff. By design, they defer. They did absolutely nothing with it. They ran a horrible-looking screen pass, and then they got beat up front. It was Dukas, it was one of the defensive linemen, but Burfict came and made the tackle for a loss. They had a ton of plays for negative yardage in that game, and a couple of them on that particular series.
Yeah.
Three and out punt, you got the ball, it's supposed to be your extra possession, you know, you right. steal a possession, and they don't do anything with it.
Yeah,
that series really
bothered. This offense has had a lot of negative first down plays this
yeah.
year, like a lot of negative first down plays, and negative plays on first down kill your offense. And you can have a playmaker like LeSean McCoy. Every now and then he can get you out of a 3rd and 17, right, with a screen or something like that. But you can't live like that. Yeah,
no.
You can't live like that. You have to have positive plays on first down, and they're not doing that on first down.
That's right. And I've said it as well. One of the crucial possessions in the entire game for both teams is their first offensive possession out of the second half, because you got a chance to look at what they were doing. You got a mm-hmm. chance to see their plan against you, what they were doing, what they were successful at. And pick and choose what you're going to try and do now. You're going to throw a wrinkle at them. You're going to come out and adjust. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get a chance to really hit them in the mouth with something they haven't seen or where you think they're going to hit. And the Bills haven't been able to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's been an issue, no question about it. One of the other issues I've harped on, too, is when Tyrod does break contain, I still don't think the receivers are doing enough to get open.
And we're talking about coming out of halftime. Think back to last year, Oakland game, come out of the half. LeSean McCoy goes for like 60 yards and a touchdown coming out of the half. Jacksonville, the same way, yeah. coming out of half, like 60 yards and a touchdown. Big plays, you know, and that's just not something that they're getting done this year coming out of half.
Donald and I were talking in the first hour of the show, too, Steve, about Tyrod's not been a big factor in the run game for 3 games. And I thought at Cincinnati, we were talking about the defensive ends. Dunlap, he's the one who blew up the second down play on that mm-hmm. series. Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson, both long, athletic guys.
Oh, they're really athletic.
Who did a good job of sealing the outside.
They're both 6'7". They're both 6'7", 6'8", and they play with great leverage. They're great, very athletic guys, and they're complemented on the inside by Geno Atkins and Pat Sims, who are big, thick-bodied guys. Cincinnati is really gifted athletically.
Yeah.
Really gifted athletically. And I don't know if Bills fans know, but Vontaze Burfict was a top 10 talented pick. And he has a lot of, as we've seen with his reputation for late hits and suspensions and fines, that's the reason he didn't get picked in the top 10 of that draft. And the only reason he signed in Cincinnati was because Marvin Lewis sought him out and they started talking at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, and Marvin Lewis fostered a personal relationship with Vontaze. So he's got – that's why Vontaze signed there. They've got an extra top 10 pick on that defense along with all those guys we've just mentioned on the front. And the guys in the back end, Adam Jones is 34 years old. He's keeping two first-round draft picks on the bench. That's how good he is athletically. They are loaded on defense. And I see the difficulty in scoring on them. And so I tend to like, listen, I mean, holding them to 20 points was a great defensive effort, particularly given the four turnovers or three turnovers they got. But that's a team that's going to be a tough, tough team to beat, despite the fact that they were 0-3 to begin the year.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing that screws up everybody's perception of that loss, and it was a bad loss, and the game was there to be won for Buffalo. But the Bengals, this is what I got from Steve coming out of the game Sunday after the game, the Bengals were much better than a 1-3 team. That 1-3 record
think
kind
about
of
this.
Skewed our perception.
Think about this. They should have been in Green Bay. They won the Green Bay game in Green Bay. They lumped them up. They missed a kick.
Mm-hmm.
They missed a kick to go to overtime, and they went to overtime because they missed the kick and lost to Aaron Rodgers. Now, the same Aaron Rodgers who went into Dallas and beat the Cowboys.
Right.
They beat that team in their own joint. They should have beaten them, and that took them to 0-3. This Cincinnati team is going to be there at the end. They're going to win. They're going to win the AFC North. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. Cincinnati's going to win their division after going 0-3 to start. That's how good they are.
Steve Tasker in studio with us for a couple of more minutes. Your calls are welcome. Let's go to Mike in Amherst. Hello, Mike. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I just want to say a couple of things, about the game. I can't believe that we lost that after overperforming against Atlanta and Denver. Seems like we're playing down to our competition.
Did you just hear the last 2 or 3 minutes of the show, Mike?
Go ahead, Mike.
That's exactly what we talked about.
Yeah.
No, I was just shooting around a basketball, so I didn't listen. But
okay.
this team really reminds me. I know it's a stretch, but it reminds me of that Denver Broncos team that won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And let me tell you why. Because on defense, not many teams are going to score more than 25 on these guys. They've proven that.
Nobody scored more than 20.
Right, 20. So, I can only really see the Patriots giving us trouble there. But the thing is, we can't keep wasting our time when we have a defense like this on a guy that can't help us finish a game. I'm sorry, Tyrod Taylor is incapable of giving us that last drive that we need to put us over the top. And that's the main difference that I see from that Denver team.
So what would you do, Mike?
Well, it's tough because, Peterman, he's still developing and stuff. But, I could have seen us getting like a Kaepernick or someone, just to be, it's someone who's been proven to just be able to win games. And Tyrod Taylor isn't it. I really don't have a great answer for you
there. Yeah, that's the dilemma that the Bills are in. I mean, you're not gonna make a change like that you're not gonna make a change like that and pull the plug on a guy like Tyrod Taylor who's believe me, if you make that change that people are some of the callers are clamoring for, like, well, let's just see what Peterman's got or whatever. What happens if Peterman goes in and stinks?
Right.
And I mean really stinks. Now you're going to tell Tyrod, hey, come in and win for us? Mm-hmm. That ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that you should feel that bad about Tyrod, his feelings getting hurt or whatever, but that, the rest of the team is standing there looking at you too.
Right.
So here's the thing, and I've said this before, and I don't know. Tyrod's going to be your quarterback until any person on the roster – gives you a better chance, and it doesn't matter who it is. If it's Peterman, if it's whoever, Tyrod is your quarterback until there is any other person on your roster who will give you a better chance to win. So you got to figure out a way to win with this guy, and right. And they've done it. I mean, they're 3-2, and they played really well in these games to do it. They don't, and they've won it the way we thought they would win it. They're going to win it with defense and with a running game, and they win it just by scoring just enough points to outdistance the other team, mm-hmm. make fewer mistakes than the other team, capitalize on the turnovers. That's how they're going to win games. And I'll tell you what, it's not a bad recipe because it's pretty good thus far in this season. You lost to some really good football teams.
Yeah, I just don't. You don't change your quarterback sitting at 3-2 at the bye, playing some of the best defenses that you've faced. Four of the best defenses in the NFL.
Four of the top five defenses.
Yeah.
Well, top ten.
Top
defenses.
Ten defenses.
You three of the change, top five defenses.
Why change your quarterback? We've had callers say we need to change the offensive court. Why? Why? You don't make those changes sitting at 3-2, tied for the top of your division, and sitting in the playoffs with a bunch of other teams. You don't do that. It just does not make sense. Because then if Peterman comes in, like Steve said, and he is terrible, and you start to lose games, what message goes throughout your locker room?
What are you going to tell Kyle Williams then?
Exactly.
Well, now Tyrod does give us the best chance to win. Well, it's the same guy.
Yeah. We've seen teams do that, and it looks ridiculous, and it is ridiculous.
And you lose the locker room. Guys are starting to stand out there on a 3rd and 10 going, you know.
Right.
Are they really –
You're not
really,
trying to win games.
Trying to win this game? You know, I mean, it just blows the entire vibe of your team. I mean, here's the thing. That's why football is different than baseball or any other team sport. You don't just go out and go through the motions.
Right.
You got to invest physically. It means you got to be willing to get to feel pain. You got to be willing to sacrifice comfort. You got to be willing to work hard, sweat, and take guys on in an aggressive manner to try and push guys against their will. Guys, anytime you give them the impression that you're not in it like that, they ain't gonna be in it like that.
Right.
And that's when you start going 1-15.
Steve, do you have a bye this weekend?
I do.
Good for you.
I do. There's not CBS doesn't have many games in October. I might get some late season golf in, actually. Yeah.
But you said you love to play golf in the fall.
It is a great time to play golf. This is my favorite time of year, weather wise. And
me too.
The leaves are turning. I don't know. Yeah. I think in the next week or two it's going to be full. What do they call it? Peak.
Peak foliage.
Peak foliage. Yes. That's it. I think in the next couple of weeks you're going to see it.
Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next week.
Guys.
Steve Tasker, Bills special teams ace. His name is on the Bills Wall of Fame. He's also with the NFL on CBS, joining us in studio on Tuesdays. We're back with more Donald and I, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones here until 3. Time now for New York State Lottery Inside the Numbers. The Bills allowed 2 touchdowns against the Bengals on Sunday. They still lead the league. They're allowing 14.8 points per game, under 15 points per game. They've given up 6 touchdowns for the first 5 games this year. That's the 3rd best start in franchise history. They gave up 5 in 1982 and 1995, a couple of other strong defenses. That's New York Lottery Inside the Numbers. Take a break from the expected. Play scratch-off games from the New York Lottery. John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3. Trey Wingo from ESPN going to join us at the top of the next hour. We'll welcome your phone calls or tweets. You can weigh in on our Twitter poll, and let's reset that. For the Bills, assuming, as I think you should, that Tyrod Taylor stays on a quarterback, I do think that's what they're doing. I think Sean McDermott has and reinforced that. What would help Tyrod the most for the rest of the season? He needs help, clearly. They all do. I mean, it's a team game. What would help him the most, the Tyrod and the Buffalo offense? 45% of you say getting better weapons in the pass game. 34% of you say in the return of a strong run game. 12% say changing the offensive scheme. 9% of you have something else in mind. Again, not a referendum on Tyrod. Should he stay? Should he go? Should he start? Blah, blah, blah. It looks like to me he's starting. I think we can agree on that. But if he is the starter, which we assume he will be, what would help him the most moving forward? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. And a couple of tweets. Tyler K tweets him, "Can't stand it when you're forcing your opinions down the throats of listeners. What do you see in Tyrod Taylor? Because he's definitely not helping." I'm not forcing my opinions down anybody. I don't think you are either. We're soliciting your opinions via Twitter, by the phone calls. Just because we may disagree, you don't have to agree with me. I'm not forcing my opinions down anybody's throat.
So call up and let's talk about this.
Let's talk this through.
Let's talk about this.
Not forcing my opinions down your throat. You can disagree. I see many of the same things that you see in Tyrod Taylor. Is that because I disagree, that's forcing my opinions down your throat?
The crazy thing is we've said on air multiple times, Tyrod needs to be better in all of these different areas. We say that. But we also say in the same breath, if you try to change a quarterback sitting at 3-2, it does not make sense. It just doesn't make sense.
Unproven rookie?
Right.
Doesn't make sense now.
It doesn't. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't think it makes sense to you to change your quarterback. I don't think it makes sense to people who have said change your offensive coordinator. None of that stuff makes sense. You stick with these guys. You figure out ways to win. That's how you do it.
Here's a call from Jake in Buffalo. Welcome, Jake. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. I was just thinking that maybe they should try to go out and get Victor Cruz.
Victor Cruz to help out a wide receiver. Donald, yeah, closet Giants fan that you are.
Whoa.
I know you are. I know you like the G-men.
You sound like my family back home. They're like, man, I know you still like the Giants.
You do like the Giants. I know you do.
You know, Victor Cruz is a good slot receiver at this point. I don't know how much he really has left in the tank after the big injury. You know, that really affected him. He hasn't been the same player, which is why he's still isn't with the Giants and why he didn't make the Bears team. You know, he's just not the same player. So I don't know how much of a difference he would make coming in here.
Let's go to Tom in West Seneca. Welcome, Tom. You're on the air with us.
Yes. Thank you, John. Thank you, Don, for having me on. Mm-hmm. I've got to make a correction on something I said yesterday. I remarked that Tyrod might not be the right fit for the Bills. I was wrong. That was rookishly premature. But I think that you guys hit the nail on the head when you said pull the trigger a little bit sooner. Because if you pull the trigger a smidgen too late, the play goes awry. And I think that is the key to his accuracy. And this, the accuracy, I think, can be learned and or taught. And if anybody can do it, it could be Sean McDermott and the offensive coordinator. And like I said, I was too harsh with Tyrod by saying it was not the right fit.
Don't beat yourself up, Jim. Yeah, Don't beat yourself up.
What I will say, though, is
to stick with him and let's see how it all plays out.
Don't beat yourself up, Tom.
In terms of Tyrod and his accuracy, I guess it can be, you know, you can work on accuracy. It can be learned, I guess, or taught with certain things. But actually pulling the trigger and throwing it into certain windows and things, I think that's something that's in Tyrod's mind. You know, and I don't know how much of that can be taught, like, because we've had David Lee on the show last year talk about it.
Yeah.
We've talked to different people that say the same thing. And I'm sure, you know, in Tyrod's mind, he probably wants to pull the trigger. It just doesn't happen in the course of games.
Yeah. I was just thinking of that conversation. In essence, he's got to trust what he sees, right?
Yeah.
And trust what he thinks might happen sometimes. And be ready to suffer the consequences of a couple more turnovers, a couple more interceptions.
You know, it's like if you're taking chances and your receivers are making – you're giving guys the opportunity and you can see that they're making plays for you, you know, you'll take more chances. Can you live with some interceptions? Yeah, it's going to happen. All quarterbacks have interceptions, you know. But you have to take certain chances in this league or you're just not going to be able to – you know, because guys don't come wide open. They just don't. You have to make throws. You know, we've seen quarterbacks like, man, look at that throw he just made in that window.
Tyrod do it, but just not enough.
Exactly. The throw he made to Brandon Tate was like on a rope. Great throw.
Yep.
You know, but he has to be more consistent at pulling the trigger and making those throws.
All right. We got a lot of show left and only an hour to do it. Donald's still got nuts and bolts to do, right? We kind of pushed that off to the final hour, so that's coming up. And coming up next after the top of the hour break, Trey Wingo from ESPN. He makes a regular Tuesday appearance on our show, gives us his thoughts on the Bills and the rest of the NFL. Trey Wingo coming up in the final hour of the show right after the break. So come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Bye week is here. The Bills still working at One Bills Drive. Meetings and a workout on tap here at One Bills Drive. A walkthrough light practice this afternoon. Head coach Sean McDermott will put the team through a practice tomorrow, and then they break for the bye. The Bills return to practice on Monday. They need time to heal up. They've lost tight end Charles Clay, their second most productive pass catcher, for multiple weeks. He injured his knee in the loss at Cincinnati. They also will monitor the progress made by nickel corner Leonard Johnson, who left Sunday's game with a hamstring injury. Trade in the NFL. The Arizona Cardinals, desperate for help at running back, sent a conditional draft pick to the New Orleans Saints for running back Adrian Peterson today. Cardinals' running game has been a major weakness for them since David Johnson left with a fractured wrist in week one. Peterson, 32 years of age, so far this season, 27 carries, 81 yards in his first four games this season with the Saints. Giants lost another wide receiver. Brandon Marshall underwent season-ending surgery today on his injured ankle. He made the announcement last night. He's the third Giants receiver with a foot or leg injury to be lost for the season. Marshall, in his 12th year, five-time Pro Bowl receiver, has played with the Broncos, Dolphins, Bears, the Jets and the New York Giants. The Lions are going to sign former Green Bay first-round draft pick Dayton Jones to help their defensive line. The 26th overall pick in 2013 went to training camp this year with Minnesota before going on injured reserve. Bears coach John Fox says he has complete confidence in quarterback Mitchell Trubisky, even after the rookie committed a pair of costly turnovers last night in the Bears 2017 loss to the Minnesota Vikings. Buffalo Sabres getting it set for a trip out west, a day off today. Then they hit the ice for practice tomorrow. A four-game West Coast road swing that starts on Thursday in San Jose. Sabres dropped a 6-2 game to the Devils yesterday afternoon at home. Two goals from Evander Kane, who leads the Sabres in goals with four. And baseball, the National League Division Series today at 5:30. Game four, the Nats and the Cubs. The Cubs lead the series 2-1. They can win it today. That game at Wrigley Field with the first pitch at 5:30 p.m.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropping.
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, touch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome back to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, as we continue on from One Bills Drive on this Tuesday. And every Tuesday at 2 o'clock, we take a look around the league with our guest. He joins us from ESPN, the host of NFL Live on ESPN, Trey Wingo. Trey, John Murphy, Donald Jones, thanks for coming on with us again this week.
Guys, how are you? Always good to be with you.
Hey, I want to talk. We want to talk about the Bills with you, obviously, but I just as an overview to get things started, I get the sense that five games in, we're beginning to get a sense of who's for real, who's not for real, and as we move into the second third of the season, that there's going to be separation now. The standings are awfully tightly bunched right now. Why do I feel like we're about to see some teams take off and some teams sink to the bottom?
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's sort of the way it sort of plays out almost every year. Like Seattle, the last couple of years, a struggle out of the gate, but then they get a big win this week, and now they're 3-2, and they're sitting okay in the top of their division where we thought they'd be. The Patriots could easily be 1-4, guys.
Yeah,
they could easily be 1-4, but they're 3-2. There's a three-way tie in the atop the AFC East, which is going to be really interesting. Look, the one thing that I find is very interesting every year is that people want to make predictions in August.
Yeah.
And let me just say, this is why I hate making predictions in August. Let's just roll through what's happened through the first 5 weeks of the season already. Just like we all thought, the Patriots have two home losses before week five. Just like we all thought, Buffalo and Jacksonville are atop their divisions, albeit the Buffalo Bills with a tie. Just like we thought, the Saints defense had pitched pitch a shutout. Just like we thought, the Cowboys already have as many losses through week five as they had all of last year. And just like we thought, the Giants are winless and the Jets have a three-game winning streak. Okay? So
right.
This is why people are like, well, who's going to win in August? I'm like, I can't even begin to – this is why. That's the beauty of the season. You just let it unfold, and it surprises you every year.
And, Trey, you add to all of the injuries that we just saw in this past weekend. You know, and we talk about now 5 weeks into the season, you don't know what injuries are going to creep up. And, honestly, the teams that take off and the teams that sink to the bottom, I think the difference is those teams that have more depth than those teams that don't have as much depth. You know, they end up sinking. The teams that have more depth end up rising to the top and being able to play through those injuries. But who would have thought that, you know, you'd have Odell Beckham, J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, Brandon Marshall, all, like, out for the season, all in 1 week.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, this is a Texans team that finally has a quarterback, and suddenly their defense is hurting. And they basically won it the last 2 years, the division, the AFC South, the other way around. I mean, the Giants lost four wide receivers, three for the season in their loss to the Chargers. You know, you got Odell out for the year, Brandon Marshall's out for the year, Dwayne Harris, who's their punt returner as well as their fourth wide receiver, he's out for the year, and we don't know what's going on with Sterling Shepard.
Right.
Look, health matters more than anything else in this game. 2 years ago when the Panthers and Broncos played in the Super Bowl, combined they had 15 players on injured reserve. That year alone, 2015, I think the Patriots had 19 or 20. So health is always going to be a huge determining factor in this league.
with Trey Wingo from ESPN, the host of their NFL Live show. All right, Trey, let's talk about the Bills a little bit. I think we knew here that the Bengals were not going to be an easy game for Buffalo, but when you struggle on offense as much as the Bills did on Sunday, you really can't beat anybody, right, the way the Buffalo Bills played offense Sunday.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we've talked about on the show before the lack of production from the wide receivers, so really it has been Charles Clay in the running game, and what happens in the game, Charles Clay goes out early. And that creates a problem. You know, this is a game that a lot of Buffalo fans were very hopeful for. Now, Cincinnati wasn't going to roll over, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're 3-1 and you're going on the road to take on a 1-3 team, this was a chance for the Bills to say, hey, we are for real. And we'll go up and we'll be 4-1 in this division and we'll be alone in first place. Instead, they have a little bit of a lapse because of a lack of offensive production. And now we're looking at a three-way tie for first place in the AFC East, with, of all people, the New York Jets, which is just amazing.
Right.
The weird thing about this is, you know, the Jets were like, yeah, we'll get a quarterback. It may end up that the Giants may draft the quarterback that the Jets wanted to draft.
Yeah.
The Giants are 0-5, and I think we can conclude their season is over. So it is interesting. But, yeah, this was a tough one for the Bills because people were looking at them sort of skeptically and saying, all right, we'll go win this game, and then we'll think, hey, we may have something here. Instead, they kind of lay an egg on offense, and like, okay, I still don't know what Buffalo is.
And we still don't know, and as I said, I think we're going to find out, and even Sean McDermott has said publicly a couple of times that, you know, you'll get a sense of what kind of team you have in the NFL around the end of October, a couple of weeks away for the Buffalo Bills. I guess that's fair, but, you know, I think we all have some pretty good perceptions of what kind of team they are. They're very good on defense. They take the ball away at a really good rate. And they struggle, even with health, they struggle to generate a lot of momentum on offense.
Yeah, look, if they're going to be the team that ends the drought, the longest playoff drought in the NFL, active.
Is it? Really?
Yeah, I know you never heard that. They have to find more production on offense. I mean, look, what the Broncos did a couple years ago is the rarest of rare, okay? They just sort of crept along. And so, it was just meant to be that year. That's the only way I can describe it. So they have got to find a way. They have got to find a way to get more production on the offensive side of the ball.
Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, on the line with us. And we talked about some of the injuries. The injury, I know, you know, we talked about the Giants injury. The J.J. Watt injury, it almost transcended football, I thought, a little bit on Sunday night, especially, Trey, because of, you know, everybody knows what he's done for the game, what he's done for Houston, what he did post the hurricane down there. It was kind of a moment in the NFL, and I'm not quite sure, you know, how that happened, but it did happen Sunday, didn't it?
Well, look, here's a guy who, you know, is not a quarterback and is not on a team that is, you know, really has a national following, that has become one of the faces of the NFL, especially for the things he's done off the field, raising, what, $37 million through his social media account to help the Houston area hit with Hurricane Harvey. I mean, if you're looking at the top three recognizable faces in the NFL, J.J. Watt is going to be one of them. And, you know, he had a rough year last year with the back injuries, and he was pledged to come back, and then just to see his knee buckle like that, it broke your heart a little bit, because you know what he's been through, and anybody that's played knows what it takes to get on that field and the challenge that's in front of him now. I mean, he even admitted it after the game, or said it after the game, look, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm devastated by this. So that was a real take-your-breath-away moment, and, you know, you hope for him that he can get back and maybe be the player that he once was, because at his prime, I'm not sure many people were better than J.J. Watt.
Yeah, exactly. At his prime, you don't know who. You can't think of many people that are better than him in the league right now. And even, you know, and throughout the history, I think he would go down in his prime as one of the best defensive ends in the history of the game, I think, or at least most talented. I think that, you know, it has to start to creep up in his mind how much longer he wants to deal with these different injuries.
No question. I mean, and just to go to the historical perspective, he's the only player ever with multiple 20 sack seasons, you know. So I mean, he's done something already that no one's ever done, and it was an arduous task. I mean, back injuries are brutal, you know, they really are, and this break there where it is on that knee is going to be a real tough one to come back from. If anyone can do it, it's JJ, and every football fan would love to see him come back, except those after the block.
Yeah. Hey, Trey, what did you make of Ben Roethlisberger's game, you know, his performance on the field, 5 interceptions, but maybe his post-game, that weird sort of self-pitying, somewhat sarcastic comment about maybe I'm done. I don't know what to make of all that. We're trying to figure out if he was joking around or if he really feels that way.
Well, the easy part of that is game. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, it was bad. I mean, it was five interceptions, first five-interception game of his career. And we sort of broke it down. Four of those interceptions came when he was trying to throw it to a receiver who had less than 1 yard of separation or less, 3 feet basically from your corner. So he's trying to force a lot of throws into tight windows. And sometimes when you do that, these kind of games happen. You know, there's two ways to look at the post game. One is, you know, it's like your cornerback. You say you got to have a short memory. Well, if you're a quarterback and you play that badly, you got to have a short memory and say, well, yep, that sucked. I move on. We'll try and get it done. The other thing that's interesting is that, you know, for a couple of years now, Ben has been very sort of coy about whether or not how long he's going to continue to play. And you know, some people say when you start talking about retirement, you're halfway out the door already. And if I'm a Steeler fan, that would be the thing that I would be most concerned about, just because, okay, we've sort of heard this talk for the last couple of years, and you know, then he sort of alludes to it again after a really bad game. That's the thing, I think, more than the game itself, that would trouble me if I'm a waiver of the terrible towel.
Yeah, and you also have that kind of the week before, that public back and forth with Antonio Brown, right, when he criticized Brown's sideline antics. It does call into question where Roethlisberger's head is at these days, doesn't it?
It does, because, you know, we had a couple folks on NFL Live saying, hey, man, you know, it's not your job to call out other players. If you want to talk to me one to one, but don't do that. Don't do that through the press, because we can work something out with us. If we have an issue, let's keep it in the locker room. And that was not the case with what Ben did after the Antonio Brown outburst, which, by the way, is not something that Antonio Brown has a history of, like
right.
Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, he just had one play where he was wide ass open and they didn't hit him, and he sort of lost his mind. That's understandable. But you don't want to see a pattern of it, but you don't want to, you know, go all in on a guy for doing it one time either.
The Steelers' you know, meltdown sort of overshadowed a tremendous game by Leonard Fournette, who is becoming one of the stars of the rookie class already, huh?
Yeah, at 22 and some odd days, he's the youngest player in NFL history to have a 90-yard touchdown run. But my favorite part of that game was when he broke out to the right side for like a 15, 20-yard gain, and he saw Mike Mitchell, the safety, coming at him, and he waved him over like, you want to take this on?
Yeah.
Come get a piece.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Fournette, you look at Leonard Fournette, he's like A'Shaun Robinson, the Detroit Lions defensive lineman. They're both 22. I swear they look 64. I mean, it's just, I mean, they're the oldest. They're the Greg Odens of the NFL, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, Trey, what about Jacksonville, though? Do you feel like Jacksonville is real? See, we played Jacksonville last year, and I felt like they were one of the most talented young teams in the league. This year, they're actually able to string together some wins. They blew out Baltimore. Now they blew out Pittsburgh. They seem like a team that's on their way.
Well, look, they have invested a lot of money on that defense. Okay, with Jalen Ramsey, they get A.J. Bouye, the cornerback from Houston. So they have two exceptional corners. Now they've started to get a lot of payoff from their front seven guys. You know, Miles Jack, Fowler is back. They get, in the last two off seasons, they get Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell. That's a lot up front. What's interesting is how they're winning. With defense, they are basically trying to make sure Blake Bortles doesn't lose them every game. That's the way they're managing their offense. He was 8 of 14 for 95 yards on Sunday. Doug Marrone has made it pretty clear they are going to run the ball, and they're going to play good defense, and they're going to limit Blake Bortles' opportunities to ruin a game for them, which is really a remarkable way of playing football in 2017, if you think about it.
Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, on the line with us. This just in, Trey, Aaron Rodgers is clutch. We knew that, right? He did it against the Cowboys. But I'm kind of fascinated by Green Bay in that you got Rodgers and kind of a deeply flawed Green Bay team, but Rodgers might be good enough to lift them pretty deep into the playoffs.
He did it last year.
Yeah.
I mean, they made it, to the championship game, and they were banged up. I mean, they were completely banged up last year. So, unfortunately for them, that is sort of presenting themselves to be the same situation. But you have the Packers at 4-1, you have Carolina at 4-1, who's really good, and Philadelphia is very interesting at 4-1 because they have all the pieces. But the thing that was interesting about Aaron Rodgers, that was his 18th touchdown throw in the fourth quarter since the start of last season. That's the most of any player in the NFL over that time frame. And I'm telling you, as soon as the Cowboys threw it on 2nd-and-1, before Dak Prescott ran it in on 3rd-and-1, I thought, man, they should not have thrown that ball there,
right?
Because you don't want to give this guy a chance. Because if you give him a chance, he more than likely is going to burn you, especially if you have the Cowboys defense, which is very suspect. So I'm not saying Dak Prescott shouldn't have scored in that situation because you need to take the points. But I wish they had run the ball on second one and maybe eat off 20, 25, 30 seconds more clock because the Cowboys still had timeouts. They weren't worried about time. If they needed to stop the clock, they could have done it. I just think it was a poor play selection, play design, play call by the coaching staff to allow them, the Packers meaning, to have a chance to come back, not only tie the game, but go ahead and win the game outright.
Yeah, Trey, the elite quarterbacks, it's like if you give them the ball with a minute and 30 seconds left, in your mind, you're like, they're going to score. You know,
right.
I just
exactly
feel like that with Aaron Rodgers, with Tom Brady, even a guy like Drew Brees, it's like they're going to score. You gave them too much time on the clock. But it has to come a point in Green Bay where even in Aaron Rodgers' mind, he's like, we need a defense. Like, I can't do this myself every single week.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, Brady did it against the Texans in week three it was. You know, they left him too much time, and he went right down the field and burned him. The defense is going to be a problem. Look, it's the same problem for the Cowboys. It's the same problem for the Packers. They've had some injuries back there, obviously, with Mike Daniels missing some time, but Green Bay has got to find a more consistent pass rush. Besides Clay Matthews, that's what they've got to get going. Because Dak is one of the – well, Dak's a little different because he's so mobile. He's like Tyrod, but he's so much thicker. You know, Tyrod, you worry about some of the shots. Dak is a big guy. I mean, you look at him, he's thick, you know, and he's got strong legs, and you think that he can take a little more punishment that way. But Green Bay does have to work on their they do have to find a more consistent form of defense, there's no question.
Hey, Trey, last night's game, the Monday night game, was sort of the story of quarterbacks. You mentioned Trubisky already, but even the Vikings, you know, to start Bradford and then to get the big game out of Case Keenum. Pretty interesting story for a Vikings team at 3-2 that is still very much in the hunt, huh?
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, I admire Bradford for wanting to go out there, but, guys, you could tell right away, he's a sitting duck. I mean, first of all, he was so accurate week one before his knee went out, and you could tell the accuracy was not there because of his inability to drive through on that knee, because it's not his plant leg, but it's the leg that he drives through on his follow-through. And so that's a big problem. But, I mean, there were a couple of sacks where he was just touched because he could not get out of the way,
right,
and he couldn't cut on that knee. And while I admire him doing that, and I admire Mike Zimmer on some level for trying to, hey, he's my starter, I'm going to try and support him, they should have started Case Keenum, and it might have been a much different game.
Trey, you know, the interesting thing up in Minnesota to me is Teddy Bridgewater was in position where I think even in Minnesota they felt like he was going to be the face of that franchise.
Yep.
He was going to be their franchise quarterback. He goes down, you bring in Sam Bradford. He starts off the season, lights out last year. Then, you know, everything just falls off. This year you come in and Sam Bradford is the starter. You know, he starts out good again. And now he has this knee injury, which is now, you know, keeping him out of the lineup. They have to be like, man, I mean, who is our quarterback for the future now? You know, we have two guys. We have to choose between one of them.
Well, they may choose between none of them the way the injuries are going. You know, that's the bigger issue. You're right, because when Bradford's right, he's great, but he's very rarely right. And we still don't know if Teddy Bridgewater is going to be able to come back and play from that injury, and which was the worst part about it for him. It was a total non-contact thing. His knee just fell apart, basically,
right,
in that practice before the start of the 2016 season. So it's a much bigger issue in Minnesota of not just being which one, but will either one of them really be somebody we can count on? And then that becomes a much bigger issue, especially in a quarterback-rich draft, which we're looking at.
And Trey, then you have the New York Jets, who,
sure,
you know, we're going to find out what they're made of this week against New England. That's kind of obvious. But there is that three-game win streak that, you know, and I know, you know, they beat the Dolphins, they beat the Jaguars, they beat the Browns. But three wins in this league by a team that was maybe not counted on to win any games this year, you got to kind of salute the Jets for the last couple of weeks.
You absolutely have to. And you know, what we just talked about, Jacksonville's a pretty good team, and they found a way to beat Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was, you know, in their building, and that obviously is something that we think gives the Jets a little bit of an advantage. But at the end of the day, they've won three games, you know, and they've won three games in very unusual ways. And, you know, the Patriots could very easily be 1-4, as we said. That's a very distinct possibility. Had the Texans managed their timeouts better on that final drive, and had if Jameis Winston hits DeSean Jackson on that Thursday night game, he's still running for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And if Nick Folk could make one of those three kicks, they might have won that game as well. The Patriots, you know, are absolutely pedigree strong, but they've looked very vulnerable. I'm really curious to see what happens in this game, because the one thing that you do know is the Jets will find a way to get pressure with that defensive line. And the offensive line last year for the Patriots gave up 15 sacks. They've already given up 15 sacks this year.
Right.
And that doesn't count the numerous times that Brady has been hit and had to just sort of withstand pressure. And I think that that's going to be something that's very interesting to watch in this game.
Hey, Trey, you know, we always talk about Thursday night games and how, you know, some of those games are games you just don't want to watch. But I think this Thursday night is a game that a lot of people would like to watch. And you're talking about the Eagles and the Panthers, two teams that are playing pretty good right now, both sitting at 4-1. What do you think of the outcome of that game?
Well, look, this is going to be a really, really good game. Actually, the last three games have been good. The Packers-Bears was a good game. The Thursday night game between the Bucks and the Patriots was up like 26% from whatever the dreadful matchup was last year. And now you have these two 4-1 teams. And, you know, Cam was struggling in the beginning of the season, coming back from that off-season shoulder surgery. But, boy, he's looked great the last 2 weeks. He's had three TDs in each of his last two games, whether throws or runs. The last time he did that was his MVP year of 2015. And Carson Wentz looks like the real deal, man. I mean, four touchdown passes. They've got a running game. They've got depth on the defensive line. This is going to be a really, really fun game to watch on Thursday night.
All right. Hey, Trey, thanks for this. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
You got it, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. Trey Wingo of ESPN, the host of NFL Live. And coming up on November 27th, starting November 27th, the co-host of Golic and Wingo. Trey Wingo joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway. Eat fresh. We've got more to come. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Our thanks again to Trey Wingo from ESPN, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. And coming up in November, he'll be on Golic and Wingo on ESPN. Looking forward to that. Our thanks to Trey, who gives a great perspective from around the league. If you've just joined us, we had a pretty good show so far, I would say. Sean McDermott was with us in the 1 o'clock hour. Steve Tasker joined us last hour. Trey Wingo was with us. You can catch up on all of that if you missed it on our website, buffalobills.com. We'll have those posted a little bit later on in the day. John Murphy and Donald Jones here as we get set to talk about the Bills, and we'd like to hear from you. The Twitter poll today, what is the thing, the most important thing the Bills can do to get the offense going under Tyrod Taylor? What do you think? What should they focus on to get the offense going under Tyrod Taylor? We've had it up for a couple of hours, and some interesting responses. Some of them say, don't worry about Tyrod Taylor, but I'm here to say that that's the guy right now. What would help Tyrod Taylor the most the rest of the Bills season? 45% of you say better weapons in the passing game. 35% say the return of a strong run game. 12% say changing the offensive scheme. 8% say something else. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Kevin in Syracuse, welcome to the show. You're on the air with us, Kevin.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
Hey, I'm not a Tyrod. I'm going to say this right now. I'm not a Tyrod fan, okay? But I cannot lay any of this on him. You know, when you make your decision in the beginning of the year on what you want to be as a team, I keep hearing that we're trying to change the culture. I've always looked at talent trumps whatever you're trying to change. I look at Kansas City. Some of the players that they have, I'm absolutely positive we probably wouldn't have drafted them because they had flies on them, so to speak. But what they did have is talent. When I look at our receiving core, with all due respect, when we got rid of Sammy Watkins, there was no talent. We could have brought in anybody right now. There's no talent. When defenses look at us, they see no talent at the receiver. So now I can stack the box. Compared to 2 years ago, we had a very effective run game. When you have a new regime come in, instead of them saying, this part works, let's stay with that, I want to put in my own plan, which is fine, but this should we should not be surprised when we see this result. Same when Rex Ryan came, he took a very dominant defense and turned it into marshmallows. So when we get our new defensive coordinator who ran pretty much the exact same scheme, I expected the defense to be up – up near the top. So when I look at the things like you're putting into costs, I was flabbergasted. Now, we had the top running game for 2 years in a row. I have not seen anyone talk about, I think his name is Roy, when he took over for center, when Hull got hurt, he moved over to guard. We have not talked about him at all this year. Did he all of a sudden stop becoming a decent player for the number one rushing team 2 years in a row?
Yeah.
Put in this guy here. So these are some of the things that just frustrates me.
I get it, Kevin. Those are good issues, too. I agree with you on Groy. I'm not sure why he has disappeared from the scene. And to your first point, too, you're onto something there about talent versus culture, building a culture. I mean, the quote is right there from the summer, right around the time of the Sammy Watkins trade, when both Brandon Bean and I believe Sean McDermott said, we're not just accumulating talent here. I know Sean said this. We're not just putting together talent. We're building a team. Mm-hmm. That's the path they've chosen. That's why some of these decisions are made, both in terms of who's on the roster, who's getting playing time, who will be on the roster moving forward. It's clearly that's the direction they're headed in, and the results will prove out. And back to one of the first few words you said, Kevin, in Syracuse, and thank you for calling, by the way, was something about the fix that they're in. The fix that they're in is 3-2, right, with a ton of injuries, with an offense that's struggling. But the fix that they're in at 3-2 has them second in the conference, first in the division. So let's let it play out a little bit. Let's see how it turns out. You might be right about talent. I've heard football people in this building over the years say talent trumps everything. Well, it appears this group doesn't think that's the case.
See, I look at it like, in terms of your scheme, talent does trump a lot of different things, all right? I won't say it trumps everything. Talent does trump a lot of different things, but I think smart coaches and smart general managers look at it and they say, okay, we need the most talent at the positions that are the most important to us. So you look at Sean McDermott, you look at Brandon Bean back in Carolina. Why was it that they were able to just let go of Josh Norman and say, you know what, we can let him go? All right, did it affect them last year? The back end of their defense struggled last year. They still have one of the best defenses in the NFL right now, top five defense in the league without a Josh Norman and without a big name on the back end of their defense. Why? Because they have spent their time, their money, in the front end of their defense. So when people look at it and you say, well, You need to spend money to bring in the top players. You spend money on the positions that you feel best suits your scheme. And they feel like here, the front line, the linebackers, those are the most important parts of the defense. And you can spend your money there. The back end, they're okay with drafting. Now, you still have to draft well. Mm-hmm. And they've drafted well with the cornerback in Tre'Davious White. They've done well with bringing E.J. Gaines in here. Even a guy like Sharice Wright. Even Leonard Johnson. These guys are playing good. Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde in the back end. But they feel like we spend money where it makes sense to us. I think the Patriots have the same type of philosophy. We spend the money where we feel like it makes the sense for us, and we need these guys at these positions for our scheme to work.
All right. Thank you for your call, Kevin. That was interesting and important points that you made. Time now for our regular Tuesday segment where it's kind of our last deep dive into the game that happened a couple of days ago. Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones. We do a deep dive into the techniques and some of the strategy of the game. It is brought to you by Napa. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones. We talked yesterday a lot, Donald, about Tre'Davious White, Buffalo's first-round draft pick. I thought it was a very interesting and I think when game for him, and I think when it's all said and done, we will look back on Bills at Bengals as maybe one of the significant games of his rookie career. He was in on a lot of plays, some good, some bad.
I think he was in on a lot of plays, some good, some bad. It goes back to the Denver game as well. He had some good and some bad plays, but the biggest thing is he's been able to bounce back. So what we're going to talk about here today is the first couple of plays from the game. Think back to the game, the first couple of plays. A.J. Green, the big plays. All right, that's what we're going to focus on to begin with is those big plays. In particular, the first play I want to talk about is the big touchdown play, the big 77-yard touchdown.
First
play.
Quarter, the second series, offensive series for the Cincinnati Bengals. First down at their own 23-yard line, and they got to work on Tre'Davious White right there.
Right. That's exactly what they did. They got to work on Tre'Davious White. It seems like teams want to pick on him a little bit, but as we think back to the game, if you can go on Game Pass, all 22, go look at the film a little bit, and you can see some of the things that he did wrong. Even Coach McDermott talked about it. But let's go. Let's talk about this a little bit. So Tre'Davious White lined up on the defense's left side to A.J. Green, obviously. And when they first started, Tre'Davious White, his eyes, it looked like they're in like a zone, like a cover three type of zone. You can see the safety coming down, or you when you think about it, the safety came down, the other safety rotated back. That's a typical cover three zone, and his job is to make sure that because he's in a zone, he has his eyes on the quarterback and everything that's coming out of the backfield as well. Now, when the ball snapped, he did a good job of backing up like he was supposed to, and you could tell that it was a cover three.
And it was play action, too. The safety kind of took a half step in.
Right. And the biggest thing that Tre'Davious did was he kept his eyes. If you think back to the play, he kept his eyes on the quarterback. And A.J. Green is a fast wide receiver, all right? And it's really deceptive fast because he's so tall. But once he gets on you, you have to make sure that you do a good job of squeezing down to the sideline, because if you lose him, which is what happened in that play, he lost him a little bit. And once he lost him, there was nothing that Tre'Davious could do. Once he lost him, A.J. Green is going by you and down the field. He did not squeeze him to the sideline, and that's something that he will learn from as he faces these top-notch wide receivers moving forward. He has to make sure that he squeezes these guys to the sideline, and he doesn't keep his eyes in the backfield too long, because when you do that, you have the big 77-yard touchdown.
Once, by squeeze, how do you do that? How do you squeeze a guy towards the sideline?
So the biggest thing is when the ball is snapped, you have to – a wide receiver is taught to get into a DB's blind spot. You're supposed to get where he can't really feel you, and you'll lose him, right? And so that's what A.J. Green did. He got right into his blind spot. The DB has to be able to – feel where A.J. Green is, and he has to, when they start running up the sideline, squeeze him. He has him like on his back. You can feel him on your back. A.J. Green got up on top of Tre'Davious White so fast that he just ran by him, and you can see, when you go back and look at it, you can see Tre'Davious actually try to squeeze him, but it was too late. He tried to squeeze him. It was too late. A.J. Green was already by him.
And once he gets by you,
it's too late.
It's over.
Yeah,
it's
too late.
Good.
He's that good. And it was the perfect coverage. It was basically one-on-one coverage because the safety had come down to help out in the run.
Yeah. So that's the one big play. At the end of the third quarter, in fact, the final play of the third quarter, A.J. Green made another big play. The Bengals had a third down, third and 10 at their own 48-yard line. And once again, Tre'Davious White found himself lined up across from A.J. Green.
Yeah, he found himself lined up across from A.J. Green. And this was one of the mistakes that he made. And it was the key mistake on this play, really. When the ball was snapped, you know, he has his eyes in at the quarterback, and he looks out. You know how wide receivers will look out and say, am I on the line of scrimmage? For some reason, I think he looks – DBs do it sometimes to make sure they're not offsides.
Remember I talked about this yesterday?
Yeah.
I don't know why he did that. Because he
well, DBs sometimes they want to be up on you and pressing, but sometimes they'll line up offsides, you know. And even a wide receiver say, hey, man, back up, you're offsides, you know. And so you can see him actually look out to the ref and point to the ref. But at the same time that he's pointing to the ref, the ball was snapped. And A.J. Green starts to take off going he took off to the inside of him. And so, you know, once he got up on top of Tre'Davious, because Tre'Davious is still looking out at the ref, it was too late at that point. It was like, man, what just happened here? And then he got himself in a tough spot because now he tried to grab, you know, and it was like it was either going to be a holding call or A.J. Green was going to come down with the ball. And, you know, he didn't get the holding call, but he did end up coming down with the ball. He had to let him go. A.J. Green ran like an end cut, caught the pass. And then what he didn't do a good job of was once he caught that ball, he didn't do a good job of making sure to get him on the ground, you know, and that's what you have to do. He went to catch the interception, which once A.J. Green caught it, you know, he caught it and kept going, and at that point, it was too late. And now he had to just catch up and try to make the tackle.
44-yard play that set up the 5-yard Joe Mixon touchdown after this. A couple of minutes ago, Sean McDermott, when he was with us an hour or so ago, talked about little things that turn into big deals. I think when you see when you watch that play, and I'd encourage you to go back and look at the video, and you see Tre'Davious turn to the sideline for a split second, that little thing allowed that 44-yard
play. That's exactly what it was. That little and you know, a lot of people don't understand how quickly things can happen. When people say it's a game of inches, it truly is a game of inches, because He probably did it for a second, a true second. He looked to the sideline. The play started at the same time, but that 1 second right there was enough to get A.J. Green past him.
It wasn't all bad for Tre'Davious White.
Right.
He kind of rebounded and made some plays as the game went along.
He rebounded, made some plays on Brandon LaFell. He made some plays on A.J. Green. And one of the plays that he did make, he made a couple of pass defenses, you know.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I was impressed with was he came back on another, like, go route type of thing, a fade ball, and he did end up squeezing towards the sideline. And that's what you want to see from a young player. You want to see him learn from his mistakes. He lined up in a press technique, and then when the ball was snapped, he actually, once they went up the sideline a little bit, he bailed a little bit, but then he squeezed to the sideline where the quarterback, only thing he could do was throw it out of bounds. He has nowhere to go. He has to throw basically a perfect pass, or he has to throw a back shoulder fade. And Andy Dalton didn't throw a back shoulder fade. He tried to throw it over the top, and what do? You end up breaking that ball up.
Yeah.
And so DBs are always taught, squeeze the wide receivers. Find them, keep them on your backside, and squeeze towards the sideline so that it doesn't give the quarterback any room to make the throw on the sideline. Wide receivers are taught, get past the wide receiver and stack him. That means as soon as you get past, you have to do a good job of stacking him so that you can continue to work the sideline but be about 3 or 4 yards from the sideline. That's a big thing. You need to be far from the sideline so that the quarterback can drop the ball over your outside shoulder. On that play, because he was squeezing him to the sideline, Andy Dalton had nowhere to go with the ball.
Yeah. Like I said, when it's all said and done, when the season is over, I'm sure this game, Sunday's game, will be near the top of Tre'Davious White's most memorable days, both good and bad in the league, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's going to learn from all of these. You know, he's going to face more receivers that are good coming up next week, and he's going to have to learn from this stuff. He doesn't really have time to go into the tank. He is this team's number one corner. He is going to face, I think they are following now with him and the team's best wide receivers. He doesn't have time to go into the tank. He has to make sure he's on top of his game, and he has to learn from each mistake that he makes.
All right, Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones, presented by Napa. Shop and save. Collect points every time you shop with Napa Rewards. Time now for the Ad Pro Sports High School Football Coach of the Week, and we start in Section 6. South Park High School's Tim Delaney. He led the Sparks to a 36-21 win over West Seneca East. They were down 21-0 at halftime. He came back to win it 36-21. The biggest comeback for South Park in over 30 years, and they claimed the South Division title, the A South Division title. In Section 6, Tim Delaney, head coach at South Park, the Coach of the Week. Section 5, it's Nick Dercola from Clyde Savannah. The Golden Eagles defeated Finney North Star Christian Academy 49-28, and Clyde Savannah is still undefeated 6-0. Coach Dercola is 11th year as head coach. Congratulations to the Ad Pro Sports High School Coaches of the Week. We've got more coming up. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We were real happy to get head coach Sean McDermott in here for a little bit after the 1 o'clock hour, and we asked him about the bye week and what the plan is for the Bills in the bye week.
We have to use this bye week to educate us on what we need to improve on, and also use it the right way to come back with a little bit more of a sense of urgency and an attitude of hey, we learn from it, but we also use it to drive us to play better the next week.
Sean McDermott has his team out on the grass practice field outside as we speak. I think they just might be wrapping up right now their Tuesday walkthrough practice tomorrow, and then they are scattered for a couple of days for the bye. Also on the show today, Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS. He was part of the CBS broadcast crew for the Bills and the Bengals the other day, and he talked about the Bills' 5-game start, their 3-win, 2-loss record, and how they have established what their recipe is for success. Here's what Steve Tasker said.
They're 3-2, and they played really well in these games to do it. They've won it the way we thought they would win it. They're going to win it with defense and with a running game, and they win it just by scoring just enough points to outdistance the other team, make fewer mistakes than the other team, capitalize on the turnovers. That's how they're going to win games. And I'll tell you what, it's not a bad recipe because it's pretty good thus far in this season. You lost to some really good football teams.
We talked a lot about the defenses that they faced, too, Donald. What did I say? The last four games, all four top 10 defenses, Atlanta number 10, Cincinnati in the top three, Denver, I think, is number one, and Carolina is number two. I mean, they're not going to face these defenses all year. Now, obviously, baked into those numbers are the Bills and their offensive futility, but, you know, there's a reason. One of the reasons why they've struggled on offense is because they've had good defenses lined up across from them.
The interesting thing is when we talk about struggling, right, and I think back to when I was playing in the league, I don't remember, and you've been around this a lot longer than me, Murph, around the NFL, I don't remember a team actually working up to Thursday, you know? Like, I feel like get off, so we would work maybe Monday.
Oh, on the bye.
On the bye, yeah. And it's evident that they want to get their things corrected, you know? Yeah. Like, Coach McDermott is, look, I understand there's some time for you guys to get with your families and all of that. And you need that. That's understandable. You need to get away from the game for a little bit. But the bye week doesn't mean we're going to go on vacation for 7 days here. You know, we're going to work a couple of days, and then I'll give you your time. They want to get their stuff corrected, and this is the week to get your stuff corrected.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's part of changing the culture. You change what went on before, and that's what they're trying to do here. Our Twitter poll today dealt with the Buffalo offense, and Tyrod Taylor remains as a starting quarterback. Many people wanted to take us down that road, and we didn't take the bait. But the question, what would help Tyrod Taylor and the Bills' offense for the most for the rest of the season? 44% of you responded, better weapons in the pass game. That's going to be tough to do. 36% say the return of a strong run game. That might not be as tough. 12% say changing the offensive scheme. 8% had something else in mind. We thank you for participating. 1,400 of you participated in our Twitter poll. That's going to do it for us today. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, our intercom board op is Derek Kramer. Assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hometer, Olivia Merrill, and Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Good show tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.